Happy New Year. Happy 2019.
Yeah, you too. It's been, it feels like it's been a while since we spoke.
Yeah, we did. We did two shows in 1 week, 2 weeks ago, and we had the break. And then this week, we kind of waited until the end of the week to get started. So here it is, Friday evening, and we're back at it. And it feels great. I feel like the last month of December, I had that, you know, cold, and it just feels so nice able to just talk and breathe freely. It's really nice. We got some news too. Like, a lot of times we take the beginning of the year and like try to forecast, you know, make predictions and things, but I think we've actually got some neat stories to discuss. You know, the biggest thing is the Apple China revenue situation, but we'll get to that. First thing I want to mention is the story that you covered, which is called AirPods for Christmas, Apple's truly wireless earbuds become a hilarious social media meme. This was cracking me up over the break. Like, you or I messaging me these like tweets that people had about AirPods and like how they're so wonderful now. And like, they're just being discovered. Tell me about this.
Yeah, this whole thing was absolutely hilarious. Like, not just the jokes, but the whole mania came about from like nowhere. It was that, from what I always felt like a BuzzFeed reporter, like doing work, digging to the root of the meme. But it was just hilarious. Like, people, for some reason, this Christmas period, there were so many people, like normal customers, who were kind of like discovering AirPods for the first time, or believing they were a lot newer than they were.
Yeah, like frame this in context is that when AirPods first came out, they made Christmas if you bought them like in the first 60 minutes or so, and then it was like,
yeah, because we got ours on, I got mine on the 19th of December.
And then, cause I remember I went to CES that year, so it was like January, and like people were asking me in a mall, like, where'd you get those? It's like, I bought them. But then last Christmas, like 2017, that whole holiday period, they were readily available until like right at the very end. They got pushed back some. So this is like, even though it's like the third Christmas with AirPods, it's kind of like the second, but it's not the first though, at least.
Yeah, everyone. Because if you want to give the first Christmas season off, because, yeah, they'd come right at the end. So if you weren't there immediately, then you weren't going to get them. And obviously, if parents are buying them for their kids, or, you know, their younger, like, teenagers and stuff, obviously, they're not going to do that. They're not going to be on the button right away.
Yeah.
But they've gone through, like, one full holiday season, plus the entire year. Like, let's not forget that. Like, these came out in the same time as the iPhone 7. If you gave somebody an iPhone 7 for Christmas, they'd immediately say it's old. Mm-hmm. Like, straight up, like, this is not new,
which is part of the meme.
Yeah. And then this is, oh, these things are like out of this world, like, where'd you get them? They're like a fashion symbol for this, for at least the holiday season. It was, they had all these like Korean pop groups were wearing them, and all these celebrities were showing up with them, and the sports teams, everybody had them. Like, seemingly Apple didn't do like a commercial, or it just kind of came out of nowhere almost. It was crazy, and everyone was doing these like, people, the root of the meme was kind of this thing where it was like, if you didn't have the AirPods, then you were like sarcastically like of a lower social class, like,
yeah, you can't afford AirPods.
yeah, it's like, and I'm not being insensitive, but AirPods are not the most expensive things in the world, right?
Well,
for headphones, they're not $0, right? But they're not like buying an iPhone 10, right? Like, which is like a $1,000 purchase, which is hard to buy for plenty,
or an Apple Watch for that matter, like,
yeah, or an Apple Watch,
the cheapest one, yeah,
they did exactly. Like, I mean I didn't buy a XS this year. It's like, they're expensive, but you've had like 2.5 years, the AirPods are like 150, right? And there are plenty of the people in the world that is a lot of money, and it's not, I'm not like trivializing it, but it is not, in the scheme of Apple products and modern technology, it's not out of the reach of realistically that many people, right? Like, The meme was taking it to such a degree that it became hilarious. And the best ones were like, oh, you're quote-unquote broke. You've only got these Beats products.
Which cost more in many cases.
Yeah, like almost every single like wireless Beats headphones cost as much or more than what the AirPods do. Yeah, like straight
I'm,
up.
I'm looking at your story right now, which like, It was a top story for a few days. Like, you know, you say you felt like a BuzzFeed reporter, but like, it was a top story for a few days because like, it's funny. It's like, part of it is like on Twitter they were trending AirPods for Christmas. It was like a trending in the USA thing. So like that's interesting. Like one of these tweets is from someone named Knox whose handle is Young10Nell, and it says top 10 richest people in the world. Number 1, AirPods owners. Number 2, people who say let's get this bread. Number 3, people with money in their bio. And number 4, some Amazon CEO or something. Like just frames it so well. Someone else named Alexander says, my little cousin got AirPods for Christmas and he is going around saying I can't hear you because you're broke. And it's like, what was one, if you have a phone with, if you have AirPods and...
Yeah, if you got AirPods but still a home button, you basically put some rims on a 1997 Honda.
It's like, they just came out of nowhere. And one of the most hilarious things to me was people taking a screenshot from their phone of like the weather or something, and then having the AirPods UI, like when you pop up in the lid of the charging case and like it shows your charging status. And like
the little Moto panel thing at the very bottom.
Yeah, they'll tweet just the screenshot of that, and they'll say like, "This weather is terrible," or like, "Should I change my iPhone background?" But like, what they're really doing is bragging that they have AirPods. It's like,
yeah, like the most subtle humble brags in the world.
And you can't even like search Twitter for that one. Really, it's just an image. And those were so popular. And like last year for the holiday season, I think they did an AirPods ad. Like in 2017, it was like the couple dancing, and the whole thing was like you can dance freely and listen to music.
Yeah,
AirPods in your ears. And this year that wasn't part of the advertising campaign. Like yeah, this just kind of like broke out.
Yeah, and there were plenty of people who were like, oh, because obviously you had all the people on the AirPods hype train, then you had the surge of everybody complaining that, you know, the AirPods are being overhyped, and it was like, screw Apple, I'm buying Beats. It's like, hello? Because that's another thing, is as much as people don't really think of the AirPods as old, a lot of people still were completely unaware that like Apple, like Beats is a subsidiary of Apple. Like,
yeah.
They've kept those brands pretty distant, even though most of them now have Apple logos on the front because they come with W1, but people just don't think of them in the same way.
Yeah, yeah. Ryan.
And the Honda comparison is so hilarious because the 1997 Honda would be the iPhone 7, which had a home button. Right, it was artificial because it was, you know, haptic presses, but it was an actual button. You know, it was a button. It's not the gesture stuff.
Yeah,
and that came out the same time as the AirPods did. But
yep.
The sevens seen as unfashionable and old, and the AirPods are still like heat of the cuff, brand new. And we saw them sold out, you know, throughout the Christmas period because of this mania. Like for me, at the moment in the UK store, if you buy them online, then the shipment date is like the 20th. It's like 3 weeks away.
Yeah, now. I was in an Apple store on the Friday after Christmas, and like one kid came up to buy AirPods from the little express checkout area, and they had one box in the whole store, and it was like he got the golden ticket. You know, he won the lottery that day. And I was just like looking at my pocket of these like dusty, nasty AirPods that have been 2 years old. So I found the whole like phenomenon and meme to be quite hilarious. And like you said, like now I think in the US even like they're in like late January if you want to order them online. Some stores get stock like pretty regularly, but
even throughout like normal period, the AirPods have never been in perfect supply. They always seem like slightly constrained, especially maybe not in the US, but on like the UK store throughout the whole last year, it was still like 3 to 5 days delivery and stuff. Yeah. It was never, oh, they're just in stock. And that's like one of the overhanging questions is like, why are these things still so hard for Apple to make like 2 years down the road?
Like, it just made me think, like, if AirPods are this popular 2 years out, that there's little pressure for Apple to replace them yet, because they're still picking up new AirPods customers, you know, and that when they do replace them, like, you know, if only for existing AirPods customers, they're not gonna be the same price. Like if they can sell out this often, of sell as many as they can make for $160, then they're probably not going to make them better for $160. Like they could probably do like they do with Apple Pencil and lots of other things, like make a higher end version for a little bit more and keep the old ones for the same price. Like as the market's performing right now, they could do that based on what they're selling. So
yeah, easily. Yeah. Even in this letter that we'll get to later, they particularly call out the AirPods as wildly popular.
Yeah.
Like, they're easily one of the biggest things. And I've seen some people like, oh, the reason they're supply constrained is they're obviously about to come up with like the second generation model, or the Qi charging case model is just around the corner. I think that's very unlikely. It's just, you know, Christmas period and they were super in demand. Like the Twitter trend, which was like AirPods for Christmas, it said it had like 30,000 tweets, and then the actual like hashtag Christmas had like 5,000. It was like beating it was like beating the most generic terms. It was like AirPods for Christmas, like crazy. And there are all these things like, oh, my parents are running around on like New Year's Day trying to find them and they're not available. Like, they're just out of stock because they're very popular. And when the Qi case or the wireless charging case even comes out, it was always marketed as an optional extra. Like, it's not guaranteed that they'll start shipping them in the boxes.
Yeah.
So the supply of the current AirPods is kind of irrelevant to if that case comes out, because all they've said to date is that it's going to be an optional extra, so you have to pay, you know, $70 or whatever for the wireless charging case on top of the original AirPods. Now, hopefully, if you do buy new ones, they will put it in the box, but it's not guaranteed. They could carry on selling the old style for ages if they really had to.
Yeah, I remember, like, when AirPods first came out, I remember my initial reaction was that, like, because they were rumored, you know, we knew even the name was the trademark, so we kind of knew the name even, and it was like, just imagining wireless headphones, you know, earphones, of like, what are they like? And then we saw them and it was like, they literally just cut the cord on earpods, and that's AirPods. You know, they did some of the stuff like really, but visually it just looks like at a glance, you cut the cord off of them. Like, I even had a kid when I was walking my dog in the neighborhood one day, ask me, are those wireless or are they broken? <It's> like, they're wireless. That was over a year ago. But I remember, like, one celebrity tweeted with AirPods in a photo, and, like, people were tweeting, like, oh, AirPods are mainstream now. And it was, like, kind of a joke then, because they really weren't yet. But now they are. And it's, like, as a veteran AirPods consumer, like, how are you feeling 2 years later, you know, now that they're going mainstream? What do you think about AirPods after 2 years of use?
Yeah, because definitely when they first came out, they were just joked for, like, being, like, cigarette butts in your ears. And now, at least at the moment, on the writing of this meme, they're almost like a fashion item. So
yeah,
the change there is just hilarious. I love my AirPods still, and they're definitely unbeaten, because it's been quite a while now, and we haven't really seen anything that can offer the exact same feature set as the AirPods at the same price with the same base functionality. Like, you see a lot of them that come in maybe slightly more expensive, like, what, you know, like the 180 mark, yeah. But they don't have... The case is much larger,
mm-hmm.
and the battery life isn't as good, for instance. Like, I don't think we've really seen one that can go toe-to-toe on every spec of what Apple offers on their first-generation product, right? That's,
yeah, obviously, you're not going to match the iOS integration, but, like, like Google can do that on Android. And I think, like, Google's special stuff has gotten, like, mixed reviews. Like, I think some people like the wired stuff that they do better than the wireless.
Because Google doesn't even do direct AirPods competitors at the moment. The closest they have, which are the Pixel Buds, which are wireless, but they're wired between each ear.
Yeah, yeah. And like, the only thing in recent news that I've seen that is kind of competitive is, like, today we covered a story of Bang & Olufsen releasing, or, like, promising to release a version of, I think they're called E8, which is such a great name. Not really. Of their wireless earbuds. They already make a wireless version for like $300, but they're going to make a wireless version with a case that charges wirelessly too for $350. It's like the only thing better there is, like, you know, to charge the case itself. And those Bose SoundSport Free, or whatever they're called, headphones that I've got, like, for the long runs, those, you know, they're like a sporty version of AirPods, you know, but they've got clunky Bluetooth, and, like, they disconnect like no other.
And the actual buds are way bigger, right?
Yeah, they're way bigger. Yeah. Like, they look like little bullets in your ears.
The case is huge.
The case charges with micro USB, which is, like, you know, at this point, I'm kind of annoyed about Lightning. Like, I wish it was wireless, but, like, micro USB, come on, you know.
And we saw Huawei do their, like, free pods or whatever they called them the other month.
Yeah.
And they basically direct clones, but even there the battery life was not the same, the case was bulkier, and so nothing's quite matched what AirPods do.
Yeah.
And the reason I love them so much is they fit in, like, the change pocket inside my jeans pocket, so the small pocket inside the big pocket, and it is tight. Like, if the case could be slightly smaller, they'd actually fit, like, fine. So I'd say right now it's very, very snug fit, but they do fit that way. And when I had older headphones, like, I still have big, like, over-ear can wireless headphones.
Yeah.
But they'd never go anywhere. I just use them at home, like, in the office sometimes. Because if they're not fitting in my pocket, I'm not taking them. And the AirPods fit so nicely in there.
Yeah. The Bose things I have, they go in a little pouch that I've got just for, like, I've got, like, a backup watch charger and battery in there. And I've got a heart rate strap for my arm from Polar, and then I've got those, and it's like that's just for, like, those run days. But, like, my routine when I leave the house is, like, I pad all my pockets down, and I'm like, phone, yep, keys, yep, pods, yep, wallet. So it's like those four things.
Yeah.
And AirPods have just maintained, like, even if I'm not going to use them, I don't think about it just because they're so pocketable. So they've maintained that. And I used to be that way with like earbuds too. Like I'd just take them, you know, to use, listen, just in case. But not, you know, I'd go through earbuds too. And like, I've got the same AirPods as day one. Like they're quite dirty, but the same ones.
Yeah. With all those upsides being said, I had to clean my AirPods last week because I'd noticed that the sound volume had gone down. Like I was at max volume, but it was still quiet.
Yeah.
And there are some people online who say they actually got like 40 buds and they had to get them replaced. But by far the number one solution is to just, they need cleaning because they're like gummed up with wax or whatever. So I got like a little like Q-tip bud thing and I just rubbed the outside of the grills on the buds and all this gunk came out, which is disgusting. But anyway,
yes.
And you like rub it and then like some comes out and then like, oh, that must be it. And you rub it again, like a load more comes out. So great.
Yeah.
So, but, and the cleaning, right? I'm not complaining that you have to clean them because that's just human nature, right? We produce wax and it gets gummed in the earbuds. But that kind of process, while I was doing it, I was like looking at them and giving them like a second thought of like, you know, I love these things, but they're not perfect, right? Like, and it's been a long time enough now that I'm ready for like a next generation to kind of fix some of the problems. And my number one thing is that the actual AirPods themselves, when you look at them really, really close, they're like a perfect reproduction of the AirPods without wires. But the AirPods aren't as premium as they could be. Like that design is, they're, for a start, they're all plastic and they're not like unibody single pieces. They're like two bits that snap together.
Yeah.
And what happens is over your course of owning the AirPods, the groove where the two bits have been glued together just gets slowly covered in like dirt and lint. And it just builds up in that tiny little channel. And so what my AirPods look right now is they just have a massive black line that goes all the way around them because you can see the seam essentially.
And the easiest way to fix that is to make a black version. Or a gray version, or like a dark color version, but not white. Like white is, it's going to show you every piece of dust, dirt, grime there, and it collects with that seam, like you said. But if they make a black version, it'll be less, you know, noticeable.
And I would like more colors. That would be nice. Yeah,
and people want black. Like even if they call it space gray, and it's just like a dark color, you know, that'd be cool.
Yeah, if I had the choice, I'd pick black every single day of the week. I would. I don't buy Apple products to show off their branding, and the white buds are just like, I feel like I'm advertising for them, and I just don't like.
Well,
my clothes like that as well. I don't like, no, like big logos everywhere.
There's no black, you know, earbuds that are as small as AirPods that are also wireless. Like we mentioned a moment ago, like so, even if you saw those, you'd be like, oh, those are the tiny with a little metal tip on them. Like, you know, those are AirPods still. Like I think that they still be identifiable because there's nothing quite like them.
And even if they're white, I feel like they could do a newer design where you didn't have to have seams on them and just be like more premium and nicer.
Yeah.
Secondly, and this has been a problem since the beginning, but I don't know if it's got worse or it just agitates me more nowadays, but when you're swapping between devices, like if you just put your AirPods in and it's connected to the previous like phone that you already had it connected to the day before, they go ding dong instantly and you can get going. But if you're like, if they connect to the phone, but then you want to use them with your iPad, you go into the little audio menu and you click iPad, and then you get that spinner, and I'd say about 20% of the time it spins for like half a second and it's done. And then the majority of the time, it will spin for like up to 10 seconds. And then maybe the AirPods indicator disappears and it comes back, and then it is, and then finally it connects. It's like, why does it take that long? Like, make it faster.
Yeah, it's so funny that you mentioned that because I think I experienced that sometimes. But what I recall the most is when AirPods were brand new for the first like 6 months or so, switching from the phone to the watch was really hard. And I remember I would drive to the beach and park my car, and I would take my phone and put it in airplane mode so that it wouldn't pair with the AirPods like at all. And then I'd like put it in the center console and hide it away. And then I would try and pair the AirPods to the like connect my watch to the AirPods. And like sometimes it just wouldn't work. And I just had to like bring the phone too so that I'd have audio on the run. But like I haven't had that problem in 18 months. Like it was the first 6 months or so. And now it's been resolved. So like that was a problem for me early on. That got resolved. But like the switching thing, I think you experienced that more than I do. And that makes me curious about what it is.
Yeah, because At nighttime, I generally use the iPad. And so if I've been using, if I've been out in the day with my AirPods in for my phone, and then I come home at night, I'm like, I want to listen to something in my room and I want to put the buds in, not to disturb anyone else. It will sit there for like an unnecessary long amount of time. It will just sit there and spin and spin. And then finally it's, oh, connected. Like, it always shows up in the menu, but you click on it, it just takes ages.
Yeah.
You just tap on it, it takes forever.
Now, for me, the Mac is always, like, from day one, has been slower to connect than the iPad or an iOS device or the watch.
I feel like the speed that you experience on the Mac is what I see on my iPad as well.
Yeah.
It just takes forever. I don't get it. Like, make it faster, please. Because especially some of these third-party headphones, they'll be, like, permanently connected to more than one device. So, and normally if you like press a button to switch between them, but when you do that, it's a lot quicker. Like, you're not fully disconnecting and reconnecting to a new device every single time, which is kind of like the AirPods Bluetooth model. So it seems like they could do this better.
Yeah. I on the Mac, I use the app Tooth Fairy, which puts a little menu bar icon on your Mac, and it's one click. Otherwise, you can have the volume as an icon in your menu bar. And I think it's off by default, but you got to turn it on, and then you can click that, pick the iPad from the menu, and then there you go. With Tooth Fairy, it's like one click, and then tries to connect, which saves you a click. But it also seems to just connect better. And there's an option within the app and the preferences under an advanced menu, and you can check a box that says improve sound quality by disabling audio input, which is interesting. It says it uses a higher audio quality codec that only works with audio output. And then you can pick how to disconnect. And it's interesting what it does. But it seems to make like Mac connection better. And it makes me wish that just like the Mac did everything UI-wise the same as iOS did in this regard. Like, you know, bring over the way that the battery, you know, pops up on the screen and that, all that stuff, and that it just works better on iOS than on the Mac without this utility.
Well, you even mentioned a little anecdote when we were chatting earlier this week about like how you're in the Apple Store and the Apple Store representative couldn't even give you a firm answer, or couldn't give the person a firm answer on whether AirPods worked with the Mac or not.
yeah, that was kind of a bummer. It was just kind of overhearing an interaction between an employee and a customer, and the customer asked to do AirPods. Like, they already owned AirPods, but they were maybe interested in buying a Mac or something. And they said, do AirPods work with the Mac? And the employee was like, I think so. I don't know. This is, you know, yes. And
both sides of that uncertainty just shows that like the interface on the Mac is not good enough, right? Like,
yeah,
the sound menu needs to be much more prominent and much clearer about what you can do with it, because it affects both like the AirPlay stuff, and again AirPlay 2 on Mac, please, and also Apple's wireless headphones. Like, yeah,
and there's probably
should AirPods work on the Mac? Shouldn't even be like a question. It should just be de facto yes, they work on everything. Like, you know, the genius should be able to know it just because it's so obvious and it's so simple, because that's how the operating system is designed, regardless of any training. And most customers, it should just be aware of it. Like, they should be able to walk up to a Mac and see that it works with AirPods. Like, that's what you get when you use the iPad. You can go, oh yeah, it's just right there. Like, you wouldn't even have that debate. And the AirPods have never been like a first class citizen on the Mac, really.
Yeah, the Mac feels more like how it works with Android, where it's like just kind of works the way that Bluetooth works.
And it does show you the battery of each individual AirPod on the sound menu, but it's not. You don't get the full graphics. It's like very small. It's just kind of like hacked on,
you get the battery of like, I think all Bluetooth accessories, just the individual ones, you know, on the Mac. So I think it might.
Yeah, but you can get the battery of both individual buds separately to the case and stuff,
right,
on the Mac.
Yeah, I don't know how that.
Right, you don't just get one battery readout; you can get like two.
Yeah, all I'm saying is I haven't tried like the Bose ones on the Mac to see if it reproduces that too. I know on the Beats wireless headphones, it has some special stuff where you can turn noise cancellation on and off, and I think that's like made just for Beats on the Mac. But I'm not sure, like, if you used
I think if you connected the Bose to the Mac, it would just show you one battery percentage, like an average of both. I don't think it would know to show you there would be like two parts to the to the same thing.
I'll have to try and see what happens there, but yeah, so it could be better on the Mac, and I'm sure that there's like perception of them not even working with Android, when in reality, like, you can hold the back of the button on the case and pair them like regular Bluetooth accessories, and also I think like maybe the Apple TV used to be that way, where you had to do it like classic Bluetooth, but then like in some version update along the way, Apple TV became the same, just like iPhone and iPad, where you can pair if you're nearby, or you know, uses iCloud is what it does. So if you've, and that's part of it too, is like if you pair to your phone, it automatically shows up on your watch and your iPad and your Mac, and then your Apple TV too was kind of like new after the first few months or so, where you can just use it, which is really neat. Like if you have like a bedroom TV and a partner, and then and they're asleep, to use AirPods as the audio source instead of the TV speakers.
And they actually added a nice little shortcut on, like, if you're on the Apple TV home screen, you can hold down the play pause button and it'll bring up the sound option, so you can connect to AirPlay speakers or AirPods right from there without having to dive into the settings menu.
Yeah, it's a good tip for HomePods too. So yeah, I mean, my biggest complaint, I think, is one that a lot of people are having lately, if you're an early adopter of AirPods, which is if you use them a lot, the battery is consumable. And just like iPhones, it's a tiny little battery, and it's going to get worn out. And so, you know, the 5-hour battery life of 50% volume starts to degrade over time. And hopefully for customers, there's an upgrade path as the battery degrades. You can replace them with something new. But I think we're, you know, like you mentioned, your audio quality problem, cleaning them helped. I think a lot of people are starting to see, including me, that they just don't last as long as they used
to. Yeah, I get that too. I went on a pretty big trip just visiting family over the holidays, and I was in the car and I was playing music constantly on about 50% volume, and it probably lasted like 3 hours. When we first got them, they were lasting 5.
Yeah,
because we even did a AirPods only episode on Happy Hour, and I remember even doing like an audio test where I just played music constantly, and they would always hit 5 hours on both buds.
It would exceed usually, right? Yeah,
like yeah, 5 hours, it'd be like 5 hours and like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And now I get like 3 hours at the same level.
I remember on that you know Happy Hour AirPods review episode, one of my early complaints was the connecting sound or the switching, like the sounds. I liked the low battery flat tire kind of sound, mm-hmm. but I didn't like the pairing balk. And now I think I don't even hear it anymore. I just get used to it.
But. Yeah, I this is maybe revisionist remembering. I feel like they made that connecting sound quieter. Like a firmware update made it less noisy. Because before, our original complaint, it'd be so loud. It'd be like the biggest bong ever. Yeah. I feel like now that bong is quiet. Maybe that's just me getting adjusted to it.
I think we just go deaf to like the same thing over and over.
Yeah, you just get used to it. Yeah.
I mean, I remember in my first Apple Watch review, one of my complaints was I can set a custom text tone for contacts on the iPhone. But with the watch, it's one text tone for everyone. And you can't even change it. It's just the bell. And I hated that for months. And like now, it's like a worn on me that I'm used to it and I don't care anymore. But like if they would change it, I'd like it. But for the AirPods, maybe it got quieter. Maybe the AirPods are duller now. Maybe I'm going, you know, I'm losing my hearing, but I don't ever think about it except in you know, relation to our initial review episode. And I recently, you know, sometimes I like to watch Apple keynotes for fun. It's out of interest. And I was watching the September iPhone event, just to get like as the news is, the iPhone cycle is tough. I was like watching the keynote and like looking back at like how did they present it then, like now that we know
the terrible presentation of the XS camera and stuff.
Yeah, now that we know how things are doing, like in that regard, I was like, oh, this really isn't much of an event. Like the watch is awesome and the phone part is kind of dull. And then here we are now. But the intro video where they have the Mission Impossible style, you know, skit of like getting the clicker to Tim Cook. they had the AirPods where the girl was wearing them, and she said, you know, the magic words, "Hey," and Siri, and talked to them. And at the time, we all had to go, like, is that like the rumor? Like, were they teasing out in the, you know, new AirPods that were rumored for that feature and then didn't come out? You know, that wasn't the case, but it just made me think that feature will be nice when it's out. Because that's the one. There's like a few rumors about AirPods 2, you know, being able to say "Hey" in Siri and having the AirPods listen for that phrase and activate without having to do the double tap. Because the double tap, when AirPods are brand new, like that wasn't great, because it's like you've got to be pretty precise about where you tap. It's got to be like the body, not really the stem. And
it just kind of feels bad, like jamming the buds further into your ear.
It is amplified in your ears, like bonk, bonk. That's not great. I mean, they changed it to where it used to just be Siri, and then you can make like left and right be different things. And I use left for pause, play, and right for next track. And then I just rely on like Siri from an iPhone or a watch to do. But it made me think, like, man, that feature will be nice. Because like, I do... I do play pause regularly, which is why I use the setting, and I do skip track regularly when, you know, why I use the setting. But I would also like to use Siri to, like, raise the volume without clicking, like, just the watch especially. Because they've got that now playing screen, which is pretty aggressive and useful for raising the volume of the Digital Crown. And, like, if the iPhone's in your pocket, that's useful. But I've still found, like, if I'm running sometimes, it's just, I just want to, like, say, you know, Siri volume up or volume, you know, 80 or whatever. Yep. And that will be nice if that ships is rumored. So, you know, maybe and all of this is like, at this rate, you know, air power will be a meme like Christmas 2021 or so, you know, a couple years if it ever ships. So. This week, 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by SetApp, the first subscription service for Mac apps. And together, we're giving Happy Hour listeners the chance to win Apple's brand new MacBook Air. SetApp is the first subscription service for Mac apps, offering users access to a suite of over 130-plus apps for just $9.99 per month. A few of the notable apps include Clean My Mac X, the Flume Instagram for Mac app, Archiver, Chatmate for WhatsApp, and the Capto screen recording app, among over 100 others. Since launching almost 2 years ago, SetApp has been consistently adding great apps along with new subscribers to make the platform a success for both its users and developers. Sign up for a free trial of SetApp's collection of over 130 Mac apps using our link in the show notes, and look for the giveaway entry form to sign up for your chance to win a brand new space gray MacBook Air with Touch ID. Our thanks to SetApp for sponsoring 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour. All right, Mayo, and speaking of air power, I'd say we got this wrong. Like, we got what Apple will do, our prediction of how we'll handle this misstep wrong, you know, based on how Apple has handled every product delay of something announced and then not released. They've always, or almost always, given an update, which is, you know, in the form of, like, a Friday night news dump or a press statement of, like, we need a little more time during the weekday. But this time, air power, we waited, and I spent a few Friday, like every Friday in December, I stayed at my desk for an hour and a half longer than usual waiting for the statement to come out, and it never did. Like, the new year came.
Even today, which is the Friday.
Yeah.
And we didn't even start the show just until the normal time where there's the Apple PR bad news statement, just in case. It's like, please say something, but no.
Yeah.
No. And we were definitely wrong. Like, I was on this train for a while, and I think I kind of convinced you to join me as well. But I even double checked this. I cannot find an example where an Apple product shipped late and they never said anything about it.
Right. Right. I mean, I posted a story that was like, we're getting close to this time, and this is like examples of how it's gone, and like even people, other companies have used the same thing, and you know, it didn't happen, and people were saying that, like, we got a lot of tweets at the end of the month that were like, I don't, people guessing it's not going to happen. And I was just thinking, like, I didn't say anything to these people, but I was just thinking, like, I mean, yeah, it's convenient to say that, like, you know, as we approach the end of the month, but like, they're going to say something, though. They are. And then they didn't. And
even something as simple as like changing on the AirPods page where it says currently unavailable, like just removing the picture of the AirPower Mac completely from that page would have, that to me, that would have counted them doing something, right? But they didn't even do that. They literally have said nothing at all.
Yeah.
And it's radio silence.
Yeah. And it makes me think that it must not be dead, or they, and maybe like we're wrong again on this, but it makes me think that they must not be dead, or they tell us, and that it's close enough that they just didn't want to bother. And part of me is like, you know, is it just not a big deal because it's just a charger? Like, they wouldn't give us an update. Like, they look at it as like the same as the 18-watt USB-C charger. Like, it's just a charger. But it's not really that because it's like a new invention of like a pad loaded with Qi chargers. You know, you can put it anywhere on the mat. Like, there was a reason it was part of the keynote, not just like, you know, like the battery case they don't even tell us about. They just release it. You know, it's a bigger deal than a Me Too product that already, like Apple's version of something that already exists. It's something that they invented. They have patents for, and they said they want to share with the standards body.
They supposedly invented.
Yeah, the idea. And that they want to take this, what their work on this, and share it with the Qi wireless, you know, standards group, and so that there can be other wireless chargers like this, where there's one pad and you can put multiple things on the pad anywhere, and not like the IKEA device where you have like a literal X and you put one thing there and it's got to be precise. Like, it can be anywhere, you know. I think, like, hopefully that them not saying anything is good news, and that if it was like, if they decided we can't do this, they'd just say it and get it over with. But that by not saying anything, it's close enough that it's less of an event to just release it a little later.
Yeah. So I waited, and it was in, luckily, thanks to the UK time zone, it means I have more flexibility of covering like New Year's Day stories, because I've already celebrated New Year's Eve 8 hours before. So I woke up just slightly earlier than normal, and I was watching the clock. And obviously, once it had gone past the Friday before, I was like, we're not getting a statement anymore. This is done. But I didn't want to post something on Saturday just in case they changed the website on Sunday in like the minorest way and we just look stupid for being too early.
Yeah.
So I had this thing ready to go and written, and I literally waited until the clocks changed over in the Pacific time zone, where obviously Apple and Cupertino is. So it was 100%, no question, no quibbles, 100% missed the 2018 deadline. And I posted the story saying, you know, AirPower missed its original date. A lot of people were upset that I did that, because apparently I was being too aggressive. And I was like, and yes, it is a charger, right? There are bigger things in the world to worry about than a charging mat. But in the remit of, you know, Apple, I was really, firstly, I was annoyed that we predicted it wrong, because I was like, great, now I look like an idiot again.
Yeah.
but then second, I do not agree with the people who say it doesn't matter and it's not important in the slightest. I was really genuinely disappointed that they've taken the tack of just kind of pretending that nothing has changed.
Me too. Like, I feel like that is weak.
I don't, like you said, even if it was just like the 18-watt charger, like, even something like that, if they promise something to come out before the end of the year and it doesn't come out, it doesn't matter how big or small it is, they need to say something, right?
Some, like, sort of acknowledgement.
Yeah, yeah, even the third-party kind of combo Thunderbolt Pro GPU, mm-hmm. they changed the dates on that. You know, they made it available in December, but made it clear that it wasn't going to ship until, like, February, right? And that was within December. Like, I was really, really upset that they did not address this at all, because it's really immature and like to not even give the courtesy of an update on this thing. Like, I'm in the boat. I have not bought a single Qi charger since September 2017, because I knew I didn't want them, and what I wanted was an AirPower mat instead, right? I've literally not bought any of it, and I've been waiting the entire time. And in March, when everyone was going, oh, AirPower's late, and we turned them all down, we said no. Yep. They said 2018. I gave Apple the perfect benefit of the doubt. It was within their time window. And then June came around and it was like, yeah, probably they meant to have AirPower by now, but they didn't. It's not late, they said 2018, right? And then September rolls around, it's like, yeah, there's obviously some problems here, but look, we're not gonna count the chickens before they've hatched. And then the deadline gets missed, and then I think it's perfectly fair to point it out, hold them to account, and criticize them for not keeping to their promise and not giving anyone any visibility into what's going on now. Yeah. Because there are people waiting for the Qi charging case for the AirPods. There are people who are holding up buying like Qi mats for the thing, and it's holding back Apple's like vision. Like, the iPhone X was this future facing product, and they brought in wireless charging on the iPhone 8 series and the 10 series at that time because they were trying to push the boat forward, and the AirPower mat was in the keynote, not just because it was this like fun accessory. It was like central to their vision. They want to, everyone agrees that they eventually want to get rid of all ports on the iPhone. Like, the Lightning port is not going to be there forever, but clearly to get rid of it, you need better charging solutions than a mat per device. Like, it's just unwieldy. Like, if you want to, if you have an iPhone and iPad with no mat on it, one day you do not want to be charging them by having a separate mat for both individual products. Or if you're a couple in your bedroom, you don't want to have two mats necessarily. Like, just for one for each person's phone. Like, it's ridiculous. And everyone always complains about having to hold around so many cables, and you have to have a cable for your watch and a cable for this and a cable for that. It's like, this was their answer. It was a massive deal. Like, this is why it was keynote material. Like, this is their outlook for the vision of how their devices were going to be charged. And it didn't cover everything. And clearly, one day the mats will go away in favor of, like, proper wireless charging where you
truly
you don't need any connection to anything. Yeah. But I think it's pretty obvious that that time is still a very, very long way away, like at least 5 years. So we're going to need something between them. And Apple had this pretty good answer that no one else has released a product like it at all so far. There's no one, you know, you see all these stories about, oh, here's the AirPods equivalent. It's like the AirPower equivalent. And no, it's not. It's what Apple showed in September 2017 does not exist from any other company today. And I don't care how much it costs, I want one. And I was genuinely disappointed that, you know, it's like a little kid walking around with their fingers in the ears, like, no, nothing's going wrong, nothing's going wrong, nothing's happening. And we've now gone through a full week of 2019, and they still haven't said anything about it. So it is pretty shameful that they won't even give an update of any kind. If they said, we're still working on it, you know, we will have more to discuss. Even if they said, we've faced some technical challenges and we're still working on it, full stop.
Yeah.
Yes, they're not giving a firm date, but at least they've said something on the thing. Just pretending like it doesn't exist anymore. When you've got a picture of it on your website still, when you go to the AirPods page, if you look up the technical specs of the AirPods Series 3, it still even says supports AirPower mat on the page. And most critically, if you buy a brand new iPhone today, in the stupid pamphlet, it will tell you to place it on the AirPower mat. And yet, at the moment, they won't even acknowledge that it exists. And it's... At the September and October event, they refused press all questions on the status of the product. Like, there's been plenty of opportunities for them to give updates, and they just won't do it. And it's really, really disappointing.
Yeah,
in the scope of the Apple world, like, it's pretty bad. It's not, you know, it's not a problem of world hunger. Like, I'm not taking it to those proportions. But if you're inside the Apple ecosystem, I'm incredibly disappointed that they're just, you know, literally sticking their fingers in the ears and. It's almost like arrogance, like, you know, it's like you can't big this thing up as being so important and then just because you're having technical challenges just pretend like it doesn't matter anymore. Like, that is what, like, a bad, for me, that is like not what a premium brand company acts like. If you have a mistake, you have to own up to it, and they're just not doing it at the moment.
Yeah, part of my way of judging this is like looking at how not just you and I think about it, but how do people that read Into 5 Mac think about it, listen to Happy Hour think about it, and like even more broader than that, you know, more mainstream technology news sources think about it. And you know, we see from readers all the time, readers care, they make predictions, listeners care, they make predictions. And that's kind of no surprise given like our hyper Apple focus of 9 to 5 Mac and Happy Hour. But I saw USA Today also cover, and that's like, you know, a big news organization in the US cover the miss. And it's like, so it's not that no one notices and that by not saying anything, it's not being picked up. And I heard from Michael Stieber, who lives in Wisconsin, that his local news ran this story of like Apple misses their charging mat deadline. Like, you know, and that's probably like, you know, the people producing the show see like USA Today write about it. And so it's Apple, it's a story. But it's like people, they didn't, if their goal was to have this thing go unnoticed by mainstream, you know, watchers of the company, I don't think it worked. Like it got,
and we shouldn't let them get away with it. Like,
yeah,
pointing it out in a story is perfectly legitimate. Like,
yeah. Well, and covering the miss on new, like as the ball drops, or you know, or as New Year's strikes in California is just like covering a pre-order window opening. I mean, you can schedule it, you can write it ahead of time, and then you just take.
Yeah, some people are like, oh, you're just being so,
petty is what
petty about it. Like, oh, you had to wait exactly till this clock change and post it. It's like, I'm not going to wait till 2 days later. Then it's just a late story.
right.
And I didn't want to post it on Friday because CNBC actually posted it on Friday, mm-hmm. and they were like, AirPower misses 2018, and it was like, for a start, it's still inside 2018. And when they posted that, I was like, oh, maybe they got an Apple statement. This is it. So we went and clicked on it, and no, it's just recapping everything we already know.
Yeah, and that's another thing is like for CNBC and USA Today to be able to say in their stories, we reached out for comment to Apple and we didn't hear back. Like if that happens to us, we kind of expect it. But if it happens to CNBC or USA Today, then it feels like Apple has a thought out strategy of not responding
of
to
ignoring
those questions.
Everybody.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and to be clear, I have indeed contacted Apple PR and they have not responded to the email in any regard, not so we can join the leagues of people not getting comments on the AirPower situation.
Yeah, usually we'll get like we'll get back to you, and they don't, you know. But in this one, it's intentional not to reply. I tweeted on December 31st that I would like you said, I was annoyed at everyone saying, where's Air Power in March? Because, like, it was a sneak peek preview, and it could have been by September. I would have been kind of fine with that. But, like, it missing the year, you know, makes me feel like I'm done for being wrong. But also, like, it brought me – just, like, making jokes about it on Twitter brought me so much joy that I kind of joked that, like, maybe more joy than the actual product. It's just, like, making the best of a bad situation. But at this point, like – you know, I kind of, unless there's like something new to discuss, it's just like, you know, it's not that interesting until they, you know, something new happens. And what we've, like, so Stephen Charlton Smith tweeted out on, I think it was also on New Year's Day. He said, where is Air Power? All I've been hearing is they finally fixed it. So if true, it could ship as a product whenever Apple wants, hopefully alongside the smart battery cases for iPhone XS ? And I think that connection with like Air Power and the battery case, like, it can go together, but it doesn't have to at all. Like, it's just coincidence and like the rumor and the timing. But then someone else, like, the thing that everyone has heard is that it gets too hot, and that's the problem. And someone who told me that they had spoken with an Apple engineer, it said that it will come out. Well, I'll back up for a moment. So Mark Gurman had the story in Bloomberg like over the summer saying that, like, you know, they were targeting September release, like with the new iPhones.
Yeah, September, they said, yeah.
Yeah, and that came to pass. But like, I think part of that was that they said that they were expanding testing too, like at home more?
Yeah, and like they and said in offices, like not in controlled testing environments. They just put it in like Apple campus, people just having them in their offices to try out.
Okay, so that's kind of like the equivalent of like when HomePod was like in people's apartments and
yeah, exactly.
And yeah. So that was one thing, and then another data point is Ming-Chi Kuo of TF International Securities said late Q4 of 2018 or Q1 of 2019.
Yep.
So there's another data point, and then later on he said, I think in December, that the wireless charging case would be coming in Q1. Like late Q1, I think, something like that. Mm-hmm. So that's something to go by. But then someone told me on New Year's Eve that they'd heard from an Apple engineer that they were looking at Q1 or Q2, so 2019 of the year that we're in now. So by like WWDC, from what this person's saying. And what they said is that you could put a coin on the Air Power mat, so a metal coin, when the iPhone was charging, and that would, like, I guess the extra metal from the coin would what he says is literally have the mat catch on fire, and that would be insane to see. But like, I can kind of see, like, you know, that the three products, the watch, the AirPods, and the phone work okay. But like another element of like accidentally like putting change on there, that the more metal would have some reaction, so that you've got,
yeah, it causes more interference.
Yeah,
so because that's what chi is, really. It's right. Electromagnetic waves. So
yeah,
it's, you can confuse it with metal,
right? And so at first I kind of like didn't respond, but then it was like, you know, so what, you know, what are you saying? It's like, and they got more specific that it literally catches on fire, and that you know, they didn't say that it's been solved, but they did say Q1 or Q2, and then match that with Steve Trout and Smith's tweet of like, all he's hearing is that people are saying it's been fixed. It's like, maybe that literally is the story, is that like it worked with the three products as shown, but like other metal in the environment could have it react in a bad way. And that was the challenge. It's like, but
and that would be a fantastic gate to plaster over news stories.
Yeah.
And metal gate. You put your keys down on the Air Power mat and it combusts.
Yeah. Penny gate. Like, so, you know, like, we want to fill in the blanks in our mind of like what happened and like what's going to happen. And I think like what we can probably take from all this is that it was probably like, you know, the three products that as promised worked, but that something like in the environment, you know, you throw in loose change or like something else that's metal and it has a reaction, like it the other coils react to it in a bad way, and like you don't want to just put this warning on the box, don't, you know, can cause fire, you know. So and that's something that like other people have floated around, so it seems plausible, and that they fixed it, and so we can expect it, you know, before or by WWDC, maybe. Like that's like in my head, that's like the story in my mind.
And to be clear, I don't expect Apple to release a statement explaining the exact technical reason why they didn't come out on the right time. Like, I don't expect them to say, it's unreasonable for me to say that Apple needs to be so transparent that they say, yeah, it was literally catching on fire for the entire 2018. Like, that's just unfair. What I want them to say is, we're still working on it, or we've cancelled it, and you should give up and buy something else.
Right, like they never said why HomePod or AirPods were held back. You know, they just said, need a little more time. And in this way, they said nothing, and like, you know, we're all annoyed by it. And hopefully listeners can share and that we're annoyed by it. But it's like going forward, like, what can we say until there's like an update to it? It's just like, it is what it is, I guess. And
yeah, we've covered it this week because they've literally missed the deadline, but yeah. I'm not going to bring it up next week just unless there's change, you know, unless there's new rumors or reports. So we'll just fingers crossed and wait.
Yeah, the Friday evening waits are over. Those are done. So we'll see what happens next. 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Ops Genie, now from Atlassian. Downtime is awful. You've lived through it, I've lived through it, and it's no fun. It doesn't matter if it's at home or at work or wherever you experience downtime. When a system you rely on goes down, it immediately throws a wrench in every part of your life. When it's worse is when you're the one responsible for fixing it, and you don't have a plan to manage your way through it. That's what Ops Genie is for. Ops Genie gives your team the power to respond quickly and efficiently to unplanned issues. Are any bad issues ever planned for? I think we all know how that goes. Ops Genie helps you notify the right people through a smart combination of scheduling and escalation paths that take into account things like time zones, vacations, and holidays. Obviously, you want the right person notified immediately, but if that person's not available, you want the next person notified without having to wait only to realize that the first call person isn't actually on call. This is where Ops Genie's smart magic comes into play. It knows because you've told it previously, back when times were calmer and you could think through it all. Ops Genie keeps track of all that for you, and when problems inevitably occur, Ops Genie is there to help. Also, now that Ops Genie is part of Atlassian, it opens to all kinds of integrations with things like Jira, Amazon CloudWatch, Datadog, New Relic, and more. That's what Atlassian is all about. They integrate well with their own solutions, but they also integrate with other popular solutions too. Check it out, opsgenie.com, to sign up for a free company account for up to 5 users. No credit card required, no time restrictions. This is a fully free account for you to actually use, not just try. That's opsgenie.com. Never miss a critical alert again with Ops Genie. Our thanks to Ops Genie by Atlassian for sponsoring the show. All right, Mayo. The last story I'll talk about this week before we wrap up is kind of it dovetails off of like where we ended the show last year, which is we talked about like the analysts discussing like iPhone sales are down and like iPhones cost too much and people aren't upgrading and, you know, who's right? Will we ever find out because of how they're changing how they're reporting? You know, they're not going to share iPhone unit numbers, only revenue. And on January 2nd, toward the end of the day, and after hours trading on the market, Apple stock halted trading, which is a 10-minute break where Apple can give some kind of news that will affect trading. And they published a letter to investors, to Apple investors, and revealed that they need to make a rare revision to their revenue guidance from the previous quarter. So they, on November 1st, they said they would make, I think, $89 to $93 billion over the holiday quarter. And then we'd hear that reported, you know, in a few weeks. And they say they think that that's more like $84 billion. So quite a multi-billion dollar drop there. And
yeah, because obviously 89 to 93 is a range. But if you put it at like, you know, 91, then that's like a $7 billion drop, which is quite a lot.
Yeah, it's not even like half a billion. It's like several billion. And then if you compare that to the same quarter a year ago, it's like, okay, so, you know, it's a drop from what they predicted, but like, how did they do a year ago? Because usually you compare quarters year over year. And they had reported $88.3 billion a year ago. So it was, you know, 80, just, you know, even though their range was higher this year, like they thought they have growth there. It's lower than what the year ago was. So it's down, you know, $4.3 billion from a year ago. And, you know, it's tough, and the reaction has been, it's like been pretty hard on Apple stock, where the stock price, like, you know, it wasn't that long ago when they were the most valuable company in the world, the first to be, you know, have the valuation of $1 trillion, and that's since been like, you know, as the stock goes down, just sucked out, and now they're the fourth most valuable company after like Microsoft, Amazon, and Google in that order. So it's been a tough week, but they gave several reasons for the revenue drop. The breakdown, kind of what they gave us.
Yeah, so they essentially say that Greater China accounts for most of the shortfall. They don't say exact numbers until the January 29th investor earnings report. So at the moment, it's still like the $84 billion is still technically estimates because they're like processing the last, you know, week or so of numbers whatever. But
yeah, I'll cut in here. Like, I had a few questions for you before we, you know, I understood all of this. But it's the last quarter. They call it Q1 2019, but it's like the calendar. That's their fiscal calendar. The calendar is the holiday quarter, and so it's October, November, December. And my question to you was, we're in January now, so is there any time left for this to change? Like, they're saying estimated, and my question to you was, are they just like having the numbers come in, but it's already done, and that's correct, right? Like, that the numbers are kind of cut off, and then just like now they're just doing the math, right?
Yeah. For instance, they might not have every single number from Carius resellers on, you know, December the 31st. It might come in a week later, so they have to have. That's what the time between the end of the quarter and the investor calls for is for them to collect the numbers and to double check them and to verify them and to put them together.
Right.
So obviously we are a lot sooner. They're a lot closer to reporting this than the actual investor calls. So it's still counting as an estimate, but they will be. They like Apple could normally predict like iPhone sales to like a decimal place, so they'll be very, very accurate on the $84 billion number. Like, we're not gonna get to the investor call on the 29th and they've suddenly jumped up to 86. Like, it's not gonna happen. It will be like
in the '70s, you know.
It will be like 83.5 to 84.5. It'll be like that kind of variance.
Yeah. Well, and also, do you think that the reaction to this, and we'll get to the reasons in a moment again, but do you think that the reaction to this is like now they've already got the bad news out, the stock's been hit, and now they can actually report the numbers and there won't be a change that day. It'll just be like it's been – the market has reacted 2 weeks prior.
Again, we're not financial people, right? But the stock price will the $84 billion number will be embedded in the stock price now, right? But people can obviously make their own predictions about what the next quarter numbers will be. And so when they do guidance, when they release their next earnings guidance on the investor call, if that's even lower than what people are now worried that it will be, then obviously the stock's going to fall further.
Hmm.
And obviously there are other factors like profitability and all that stuff. But in general, you know, revenue is like a decent estimation. And so now that with the number down to 84, all the analysts will have revised down their Q2 estimates, right? Which is really the current quarter we're in now, January, February, March. And then Apple will give their guidance at the end of the month. And if the numbers are higher or lower, then the stock will go up and down depending on that.
That's true. That's a good point. Okay.
Although, there is an important point here that regardless of the numbers being good or bad, companies generally, like, they have a responsibility to be relatively accurate in their guidance because investors use that information to make decisions about whether they're going to buy more stock or sell it. And so if you're a company that is always wrong on what your guidance is compared to reality, especially when it's you guess it's going to be higher and it's lower, then you start to like plant seeds of doubt into like the investment community that you don't know how to run your business properly. Like, sure. You don't have a handle on what you're doing. And this is the first time they've had to do a revised downwards correction since 2002. So all the way from 2002 to now, they've never had to do this. And it's kind of come out of the blue, right?
Right.
The Chinese slowdown was sort of expected, but that should have already been accounted for when they did the guidance at the end of December, or when they reported last. So that's problematic on its own, right? even if the numbers were like not even that bad, if it had gone from 84 to 82, oh sorry, 88 to like 86,
mm-hmm.
on the low end, like the fact that they can't actually predict what customers are buying is a warning sign for people, because it's like the executive team doesn't have a grip on their business, right? Because if they can't predict their revenue, how can they know what products to make? Like, that's the kind of gist of it.
Yeah, so
it'd be really bad if they do this again next quarter and they say they're going to hit a number and they have to revise it down again. Like, I think people are going to give them a one-time pass because it's like out of the blue and there's a lot of conflating, mitigating reasons that I think we'll get to in a second, but it is not good straight up that they've even had to do this layer. Regardless of what the numbers say. And for a while, Apple would only report one revenue number. They wouldn't do a range, right? Before, like, Luca Mastri came in, and I think this, especially through the whole of the Steve Jobs era, their guidance would be a single number. And at the time, they were known that they would lowball that number, so that it would be it, essentially.
Yeah.
And then
Peter Oppenheimer was the CFO?
Yes, exactly. And throughout Oppenheimer's reign, they never missed. They never went below the estimate, so it was always, like, on the ball or above. And there were even a couple of times where they had to revise upwards guidance before the quarter ended. And obviously, investors don't really mind when you're revising it upwards, because that just means more good news. And one time this happened was when the iPhone 5S and 5C were announced. That launch quarter, they said they gave the number, and then they said, oh, actually, it's going to be higher.
Mm-hmm. There's a legal obligation to update investors.
Yeah, when there's significant differences.
Right.
And at some point, Apple changed from reporting a single number to reporting a range. Mm-hmm. And obviously, the idea of reporting a range is you're less likely to miss. And here we are with a range, and they missed by quite a lot. Because even if you take the lower bound of the range, it's still 4 billion difference to what they're going to report. So on just pure, you know, the finance department, they're probably getting a scolding at the moment, because it's not good regardless of what the actual, like, business problems. Right. So with that out of the way, we can talk about why the numbers are lower than what they thought they were going to be.
Well, yeah, and before we even do that, they gave four things that they cautioned investors on last quarter for the holiday quarter that would be a concern. And I think there's a few things that they kind of dismiss, and then they drill on one of the things. And at first they say that, you know, part of the challenge for the quarter was that the XS and XS Max were the flagships, and they were shipping, you know, earlier in the year this year compared to later in the year last year. And so the year
iPhone 10.
Yeah, then iPhone 10. And so by shipping a phone at the end of September versus the middle of November, it was a tough year-over-year compare, but that was baked into the number. And they say that this played out broadly in line with our expectations. So a non-issue, even though it was a concern. And then they say a strong US dollar would create foreign exchange headwinds. And they say this played out broadly in line with our expectations. Then they say they had a busy quarter, so they released a lot of new products, and some products were constrained, but that worked out with iPhones. No surprise there. And they say that the sales of Apple Watch Series 4 and iPad Pro were constrained for much of the quarter. AirPods, back again, and the new MacBook Air were also constrained. But those products weren't part of this. They break out later on that this is iPhone specific.
And you have to remember that the iPhone is by far the biggest contribution to their bottom line.
Right.
So even if they sold zero watches, it's way worse than saying zero iPhones. So right. Then that stuff being constrained is it's almost like an aside versus if the iPhone, you know, if they only made 10 million iPhones, for instance.
Yeah. And so they're saying that all was in it. We forecasted that as part of the number, and it went as planned. You know, no surprises there. And then they say, fourth, we expected economic weakness in some emerging markets. This turned out to have a significantly greater impact than we had projected. And then they say, in addition, these and other factors resulted in fewer iPhone upgrades than we'd anticipated. And that's where it, like, breaks down right there, is that, you know, emerging markets and, you know, fewer iPhone upgrades. And this is after a season of, like, investors saying, you know, iPhones are not selling as well as Apple's saying. And we always hear that. And so it's like, you know, can we take it seriously? There's always, like, a redemption point from Apple where it's like, you know, haha, investors were wrong. And then now we have this. And then so tell me more about what they say went wrong.
Yeah, so they say that the most of their revenue shortfall comes from Greater China. And they did not expect, they expected that China, the economic conditions in China were decelerating, and there was a slowdown, but that slowdown has been a lot more sudden and abrupt than they obviously expected when they made this revenue guidance, which means that Chinese customers have, and the Chinese smartphone market has contracted significantly very quickly. And obviously the iPhone is a part of the smartphone market, so less people bought iPhones in China. Which should have, and they're saying if that didn't happen, they would have been well within their numbers, because critically all four of their other businesses, services, Mac, iPad, and like the other products category, which is now named wearables, home, and accessories,
yeah,
even though it includes the iPod Touch, grew almost 20% year over year. So if the iPhone had been in line, like it's even 0% growth, they still would have had more revenue growth total overall.
Right.
But the iPhone is down predominantly from less sales in China. And if you do some cool maths, the analysts think that revenue specifically in China is down 40% year over year, which is a massive drop, right? Yeah. Like 40% in one year over year sequence, when the quarter before, so the September quarter, China revenue was up 16%. So in the space of one quarter, they've gone from 16% positive to 40% negative, which is almost insane change. And some of that can be offset by the fact that of the different timing of the releases, like we said before, the 10S and 10. But even if you account for that, it's still like a massive percentage decline. And obviously, Apple says that they can't change macroeconomic problems, but there are also, they admit, Apple-specific factors as well. They also even admit that outside of China, there were iPhone upgrades were slower than they expected in some developed markets. So it's not just a China problem, although China is the majority of the issue.
Yeah, and the China situation, I mean, they specifically say, they say, we believe the economic environment in China has been further impacted by rising trade tensions with the United States. And that is, like, the, you know, President Trump has been very aggressive with initiating a trade war with China. His policy is that he wants to, you know, make more money from business in China. You know, that products are made in China, but he wants to make money from that. And he said today, like, that the U.S. Treasury has earned, you know, billions and billions of dollars from his trade war with China and new tariffs that have been initiated. And there's, you know, a whole debate to be had around that, like how it's affecting people in the U.S. and the global economy even. But when asked about, you know, Apple, he basically said they should make products in the U.S. and his job is to run the country, not Apple, and that they're going to be fine. And I mean, Apple didn't say President Trump, but they say the rising trade tensions with the U.S. And it's like, that's U.S. trade war, you know, no doubt.
Which compounded the normal lower GDP growth slowdown in China itself.
Right. And they say they had fewer foot traffic in Apple stores in China, which is neat that they can, you know, use Apple stores as a measurement of the economy in China for their own business.
Yeah, it's like even a proxy of interest, really.
Right. It's like not just what they sell online at the retail, you know, third parties, but like how many people enter their store. Like you walk in, it clicks, you know, they count the people. So it's, you know, it's they've got numbers there. But then, like you said, it's not just China that they say, like, mostly China, but then they also give like everything else too.
Yeah, basically, I think what they're trying to get at here is that if China had been the same as the year before, they would have been well inside their number range,
sure,
right?
Yep.
But because the China number was low, theoretically, if you have really good performance in everywhere else, it would off, you know, you're reducing the problem, right? But what they're also admitting, and it's a legal you know, this is a statement of investor interest, so they can't just lie. They also have to say, yes, in some developed countries, iPhone upgrades were not as strong as we expected them to be.
Mm-hmm.
And they quote factors that broadly affect iPhone performance, including consumers adapting to a world with fewer carrier subsidies, US dollar foreign exchange price increases, and customers taking advantage of significantly reduced pricing for the iPhone battery replacements, which has obviously now ended, but that was a big deal through 2018 where people were getting $29 batteries. And clearly, we'll get to that in a sec. I want to address each of these three separately because I think it's kind of weird. Like, consumers adapting to a world with fewer carrier subsidies didn't, like, haven't they been adapting to that for like 2 years now,
yeah,
already or more?
That should be part of their guidance.
Yeah, like, I don't really, that's like the weakest argument they have on this page. Is like, yeah, surely they already knew about this stuff because it's been happening.
And
it's not new. Like,
I would argue that so they say fewer carrier subsidies. I mean, and what they reference is that historically, you know, in the past, you could go into a carrier store and pay $200 for an iPhone with a 2-year contract that costs $649, but you only see $199. And you're committed to paying your phone bill for 2 years, and then you own the phone. And you know, that's pretty consumer friendly. It's like, and that those kind of went away. It's like the carrier was marketed as like no more contracts. Instead, you just pay monthly and you can upgrade your phone still, because if we're not going to do a subsidy in your phone, we want to give you a deal anyway. So they do these finance plans and they market them as like annual upgrade plans. And to me, they're easier for me to handle than like the 2 year upgrade, or every 2 years you pay $200. Like, because then if you want to buy a new iPhone every year, it's much easier now. Like, used to you have to sell your old phone to like pay off, you know, because the next phone, like if you went from 6 to 6S, you couldn't do that for $200. You had to pay off your 6, or what you didn't actually do is pay more for the 6S than you would, you know, with a 2 year contract, because you don't want to break your contract. And you don't get that subsidy for the next year. And so now you can pay monthly, like usually around $30 a month. And I mean, long term, it's a different number, I guess. But like, you trade in your phone. It's just like selling, you know, it's similar to selling it or doing a trade-in service somewhere else. But it's very convenient. And you're not paying, you know, multi-hundred dollars at a time. You're paying like tens of dollars at a time. And it's just, it's like another bill that you have every month. And so I'm not so sure about like this fewer carrier subsidies thing. It's like, I think it's more consumer friendly now, and you don't have to do an annual upgrade either. You can do, you know, every 18 months or every 24 months, and it's like, you know, then your monthly bill is even lower. But I don't know about that. I mean, I know people like the old 2 year subsidy if you upgrade it every 2 years, but if you like to upgrade to the newest iPhone every year, those weren't that friendly. Like, you had to sell the phone and then pay more for the next phone. And in my family, like we'd have multiple people upgrading on different years, and so I just like take whoever's upgrade was available, and it kind of worked out. But like, as an individual, the new plans feel easier for upgrading every year. Like, you know, part of what Apple wants is like you to buy an iPhone every year. Like,
they don't, yeah. Although admittedly, most people didn't buy.
Most people didn't, right?
And it didn't seem like Apple. Like, that's part of the big reason they have the TikTok cycle, right? Is they kind of worked on the idea that in general, most people in the world were not buying every single upgrade. Every, like, obviously, like our arena is slightly different, but as a mainstream thing, I think they generally saw like 2 to 3 year upgrade cycles on everybody else.
Yeah, but I would argue strongly that the idea of carrier subsidies going away, like, I don't know that they went away as much as like they changed or even got better for upgrading. Because it's
definitely not a new phenomenon.
Yeah, because we didn't go from paying $650 to paying $250. Like, we went from paying $200 to paying, you know, $30, you know, arguably. And like you said, this has been part of it. Like, even Apple's copied it. Like, they had their iPhone upgrade program, which is the same thing as the carrier upgrade programs, but you have to pay for Apple Care. And it's like, at first it was only in Apple stores, and now it's online. But like, they've had time to roll that out, you know, for multiple iPhone cycles. So like you said, it's not new. It should be part of the numbers.
So that's like the weakest one. The second one is US dollar strength related price increases. And that's different to the 4X thing that they mentioned above, which is kind of like their cost related, like them buying components from suppliers and it costing more in imports and exports and stuff. What I believe this means is the price that we have to sell the iPhone for in international markets was higher than it normally would be if the dollar was weaker.
Yeah.
So if you take the same iPhone, like the $1,000 iPhone from last year and now this year, the dollar is stronger, so therefore we have to sell in local currency the iPhones at more expensive tiers in Europe, in the UK, and around the world.
Yeah. This one I can't say much about. You know, you've got the economics degree, not me. But I read it and see US dollar strong, and that sounds good. and so it's hard for me to parse out what they mean. Is it?
Well, I'll just use, like, the pound used to be, right, almost for £1, it would be $2, right? That would be the exchange rate.
Yeah.
And that was when the pound was considered really strong. Now the dollar's really strong. It's, like, close to £1 for $1. So therefore, in my local pricing now, I have to pay more pounds for the same product that you buy in America.
Yeah, because it's a US product, US company.
Yeah, because when exchange rates were really good for me, a $1,000 phone would be like £700, and now a $1,000 phone is £1,000, mm-hmm. right? So naturally, in local markets, demand will go down because the phones are getting more expensive in the local currencies,
right?
And that one is something that they can't really control, but it does like exacerbate the. If Apple is making everything 20% more expensive, say, on what they're selling in dollars, and then the exchange rates go bad, then they're also selling things, you know, almost 40% more expensive overall, because once you pile these things together. And I think the UK prices didn't change this year, but especially in like a lot of European markets, it definitely went up. And like in Canada, everyone complains about the prices being ridiculous now, and you can spend like $2,000 Canadian for like the iPhone XS or whatever. Like, and that is like they can't control the exchange rate, but there is an argument that maybe they should need to change their offerings abroad. Like, because for instance, Tesla, right, they knew that there were tariffs coming imposed on electric vehicles in China as part of this trade war stuff, and what they did is they cut the prices that they were selling the cars for to offset the increase in the price from the tariffs. So they basically burdened the cost. And there's an argument that maybe Apple should do that in markets where it's particularly expensive in local currency. Apple should reduce the prices that they sell on the phones.
Eat the cost and try and make it up in volume.
Yeah, and not directly match what the exchange rate would give you.
Right.
Obviously, that means Apple's making less money, but maybe that would restore the demand difference. And when you were selling a phone for £600 or $600, a 20% exchange rate difference obviously has a smaller impact than when you're selling a phone for $1,000, and because it's a bigger number, right? The percentages just result in bigger nominal numbers. So there's definitely an argument there for Apple could do something different. Well, they obviously don't want to, because they're essentially just making less money on every sale internationally. And clearly at the moment, they've gone for a more strategy of selling the same amount of phones or fewer, or slightly fewer, but making more money per unit. And this would go against that. But it's not something they can't do nothing about. Although in this letter, they don't seem to show any interest in doing anything about it.
Right.
And then the third one, which I think you can interpret in many different ways, in good ways and bad, is that the iPhone battery program reduced demand for iPhones in the quarter. For me, the way that I read this, anybody, if you upgraded your phone for a new battery, whether it was in the fourth quarter, whether it was in the third quarter, whereas in January, you are therefore less likely to be interested in changing to the brand new iPhone model when it came out in September. And obviously, you have to talk in broad strokes here, because there'd be plenty of people that would have got the battery replacement in January and then still were interested in the new model in September. And there are the people that wouldn't do that, and there's a massive in between. But on average, they're saying that the battery program has meant that there's been less demand for the iPhone in this cycle.
Yeah.
And I get it, because regardless of whether you think like Apple does this planned obsolescence stuff, which I don't really think has much support, if you're paying anything on your current phone to like keep service it, essentially, you're less likely to want to then give up on that servicing and change it out for a new model. It's like if you're going to buy a new car in September, you're not going to spend £1,000 on repairing it in June if you don't have to.
Right.
So it's like, because a lot of like blogs took this as Apple admits that slowing down people's phones on batteries would cause more upgrades. And I don't think that's really what they're going for here. They have to say it because it's a factor, right? This is essentially illegal. They can't lie because they'll get sued to pieces if it ever comes out wrong. And so this is a factor that they've determined caused developed markets to be less interested in buying the iPhone in this time period. And so the sales are gone down. Now, what are we talking about here? Are we talking about 10 million? No. It's probably like a million phone difference. But it's still, and that's why it's listed third, not first, which, and obviously first.
But it's
China,
a zero number that was contributing to,
Yeah. And it probably has to be at least a million for it to be mentioned. They don't say anywhere in the document, in the letter, that it's a problem. And that's, I think, where the interpretation is important, because they don't say, oh, it's a problem for our business that people were more able to replace their battery. Because that would be kind of them admitting that it would be better for them to not allow easy repairs and to not and to essentially slow down our phones to make people to upgrade, regardless of the exact mechanism of how it's happening. They don't say it's a problem, but they do say it's a contributing factor, which is it's subtle, but I think it's important.
Yep. The timing of this, so the program was announced in December 2016 or 17 and ran through all of 2018. And so $29, you can mail in your iPhone or take it into an Apple store and have the battery replaced. And the program is that you can always do that, but people didn't really know. So it kind of promoted that. And also it was a much reduced price. So I'm not sure that the price ranges, but it costs less than it would have otherwise. And so my initial thought was two things. First, they said early in the year that they said they weren't concerned about the program or wasn't a factor, you know, how it would affect iPhone sales wasn't a factor in making.
Yeah, they said they didn't consider it.
Yeah, they didn't consider it. So that's one thing. And the other thing is the program was all year long, but it only, you know, was cited through this. And so maybe the answer to that, like you said, it wasn't the biggest reason, but it was a reason. But it just made me think, like, shouldn't they have seen the, you know, 9 months of activity and then put that, you know, seen the results of that and baked it into this quarter? And it's not that no one, like, maybe there was a rush of people at the last minute to get their battery replaced because they just found out about it. But from what we've seen, you know, just looking at stores and wait times, that wasn't the case. It was that at the very beginning, it was, it took a month to get a new battery, and eventually, you know, they got battery parts, and then they people that wanted it got it done, and then you could like have it done the same day, you know. So the demand that the people that did that, it happened earlier in the year. But like you said, those people are the ones that are less likely to buy a new iPhone later in the year, and Apple wouldn't see that until they put out new iPhones. So I can understand that.
Yeah, I think there's definitely an argument where the impact of the battery program restricted people from buying new phones has more. Has an influx when the new models come out versus you're just a casual person,
yeah.
You know, upgrading in March.
Yeah, and then another thing is that the iPhone battery program is over, so now the iPhone batteries cost the regular price.
More people. No.
What's that?
No, they're cheaper than they were before.
Right, still. but they're not $29.
They're now $49 for every model before the iPhone X, and then XR and XS is $69.
Yeah, so it's no longer.
But before originally they were $79 across the board. Okay. So they're still cheaper for every single unit, even if it's like by a bit.
Yeah, but $50 and $80 is not quite the same as $30. I'd say.
It's not the impulse of $30. No.
Right, and so I think that will detract some people from doing it. Like if you're thinking like, do I want to spend $50 or $80 or buy a new phone, I think it's less appealing now.
And there was a rush, like just because of the publicity last year of, oh, you can change your you can. Get a new battery and your phone will be faster.
Yeah.
Kind of like percolated around press, you know, and TV and news station and stuff. And it became like a thing that people did. And they're like, oh, I can do this and I can hold on my phone for another 2 years.
Yeah.
But like even if they kept the prices the same through 2019, mm-hmm. I don't think the rate of people getting upgrades would continue at the same rate. Like there was a big burst of people doing it because they're like, oh, this, I can do this. And I didn't know about this before, but it wouldn't have continued at that level.
Yep.
So it would have tapered off regardless.
But even with the program ending now, it's still a concern that, you know, if you had your iPhone battery replaced in June 2018, then do you still not want to upgrade in September 2019? So I think that's, you know, like you said, that's going to be an ongoing thing. And, you know, we mentioned at the beginning of this conversation, how will Apple forecast accurately going forward? And might this be an issue going forward that the long-term effects are still unseen, and you know, hopefully they consider it. But like, we also don't know how big of a factor it is. It's the least important of the whole list, based on the ordering, at least.
Yeah, and then they specifically they talk about all the rest of their business is doing well, and mm-hmm. then they say we can't change macroeconomic conditions, but we are taking steps to improve our own personal results. And they kind of have to say this regardless, because they have to be certain to not just be like sitting on their laurels and actually, because it's a serious thing. They missed their revenue guidance and it's down year over year. So what they say they're going to do is to make it simple to trade in a phone in stores, finance the purchase over time, and then get help transferring data to the new phone.
Mm.
And obviously we've seen the trade-in stuff spring up in a big way at the end of December with the, well, actually, it was the end of November in the US with the boosted trading value. And then in the last week of December, they started doing it at retail stores in China, in the UK, and a load of other countries. They don't say in this letter whether the institution of the upgrade of the trading offers in the US had an uptick in upgrades. through December for the markets where it was available.
Right. So you could trade in. You can always trade in. Like, I think trading in retail has been a thing for many products for a long, long time. And
yes.
And then they made they usually kind of promote it around March or around Earth Day, around April. They do a big promotion of like reuse and recycle, and you know, it used to be that you get a gift card, an Apple Store gift card for a trade in. And it wasn't a great deal. But then the promotion this time was, we're going to boost the value of a trade-in. It's going to cost more than it – we're going to give you more value than we would before. And that was November like 27th or so. It was pretty late in the cycle. So they had September and November to say, we're in trouble and let's do something about it. And they had all of November or the end of November and all of December to look at the numbers and see – if we make the trade-in worth more and market it to the point where people notice and think it's tacky, and not only trade-in in stores, but also you can do it online and market it in a way that instead of giving you a gift card, we take off the price of the phone. So I think before you'd be like, here's the phone, you receive a gift card, and you pay for the new thing. Like it's two transactions, but they simplified it to be you promise to trade in the phone. And I think they literally like reduce the price of what you pay that moment, and I think it's a pretty big deal. It's not nothing to make.
Yeah, and to get the boost, you have to buy a new iPhone. Like,
yeah.
If you trade in and then you just get the gift card and walk home, you don't get the boost.
Yeah, so, you don't get the boost. It's got to be one transaction, but it makes it easier. It makes it a better deal for the consumer, even if it's not as good of a deal as like selling it privately, but that's more work. And then also online, I'm not sure that you could do online trade-in always. I think you could for like all of this year, but I'm not sure that you could always. And then to add to that, we saw the trade-in reach non-US markets late in December. So that's barely part of the number, you know, for what they saw. But it's a big question of like, did promoting the trade-in and making it easier and making it one transaction to lower the sticker price of the iPhone help in the U.S.? Because you've got a month of data to show, not to mention it's the holiday quarter where people buy gifts. And then, you know, in this quarter, based on that, you know, uptick or lack of, you know, what do you think it's going to do in China and the U.K. and all these other markets that just are just not getting it and only – I think those markets only have the promotion in stores, not
yep.
online. So there's
Correct.
Still more to be done to boost that deal. So yeah, it's
and on
there.
Top of all of that, everywhere it's marketed as limited time.
Yeah,
but this letter kind of puts it as it's not going to. You know, it's not just a promotion. They want to convert, you know, their sales model to this kind of thing like permanently. So
yeah, I can see the mechanics of you can trade in online, not just in store, and it can be during it's got to be during a transaction to reduce the value of like the transaction without having to do the gift card and like wait and then reuse the gift card for this purchase. That can be all the time. I think the boost promotion has the limited time because that's also got to like cut into Apple's profit, right? Like,
yeah.
If you pay more than what you otherwise saw fit for a used iPhone that you can then like refurbish and resell, you know, the numbers were set for a reason. And by boosting the value to the customer, then Apple makes less on the whole transaction.
Yep. And I 100% expect that to be a question on the investor earnings call from
yeah.
one of the people. It would be, have you seen the promotion of the trade-ins make a difference going into the next quarter, essentially?
Yeah. Because if not,
has it actually helped?
Yeah, because if not, then what's the point and why are you mentioning it here? It's like it's one of the only solutions that they have besides we innovate and we have a pipeline. You know?
Yeah, they say they're accelerating other initiatives, which implies they have other ideas, but clearly nothing ready to go out the door just yet.
This week, 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Text Expander from Smile. Simply put, Text Expander helps you communicate smarter. If you're not familiar with Text Expander, it's a simple but powerful app that lets you create snippets for things you frequently type or copy and paste over and over again. You can make snippets for short things you type all the time, like email addresses, website URLs, and even today's date. Or you can create snippets for longer entries like directions, references, requests, proposals, or even answers to common questions. You can summon these snippets in any app on the Mac, Windows, iPhone, and iPad using a simple abbreviation. or you can search your snippets using a hotkey while you're typing. You can even power up your whole team by sharing snippets. I've personally been a Text Expander customer for years. I cannot imagine using my Mac without Text Expander. And frankly, it's way more powerful than any built-in alternative. There's no typing and waiting to see if your shortcut worked. Just type your snippet and it instantly watches your short text expand into the right text. For example, I use semicolon lowercase d to format the current date for file names on every podcast episode using digits. Then semicolon capital D to format the current date with the month spelled out for every episode of 9 to 5 Mac Daily. I also have short text snippets for the complete HTML formatted text that goes into every podcast post. I simply type 925H for happy hour and 925D for 9 to 5 Mac Daily, then fill in the show notes and links and post. It's really fast. This saves me a ton of time from manually typing out HTML or show links, having to think about the current date, and copy and pasting the same post template day after day. A few of the tricks I use daily include my S9 snippet for typing out site:9to5mac.com, for searching Google for specific past stories, and Gcache for appending http://webcache.googleusercontent.com/search?q=cache:. That's a mouthful. Before a URL to easily access the Google cached version of a site before comparing changes for a story. I even use text snippets to currently spell common Apple executive names like Angela Arendt and Luca Maestri without embarrassing myself with typos. These are tasks that I cannot imagine doing manually anymore. There's just nothing like Text Expander out there. So visit textexpander.com/podcast for 20% off your first year and select 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour in the Where Did You Hear About Text Expander section to let Smile know you came from the show and support the podcast. Again, that's textexpander.com/podcast. And select 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour to save 20% off your first year and even more time save typing. Our thanks to Text Expander for sponsoring 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour.
Have you read this? Because there's a big takeaway that a lot of people immediately jump on when they see these, you know, Apple quote-unquote failing. Is the whole pricing strategy, right? Of every product getting more expensive over the last, like, 18 months. After you read this letter, do you come away with the perception that Apple is going to cut prices?
Okay, so one reaction to this that I've seen is that Apple's in trouble now and they'll need to cut a better deal for consumers. And just in thinking about that, I can't see how that helps. Like, if you cut into your margins a lot, then you make less money. And that, I mean, there's little Apple can do to, like, reduce cost. Like, they can make something that is literally cheaper and sell it for less, and they do that in a lot of ways. Like, the iPad, you know, the iPad isn't part of this problem, but, like, they do that on the iPad, and they sell really good iPhones for less money, just not, like, flagships. Outside of, like, inventing a new flagship that costs less money, like, to make, that's what they gotta do, is, like, reduce the cost of what they make. So I'm not certain that we see iPhone costs go down. Now, we have seen the history of, like, iPhones starting from $650 and having a $650, $750, $850 model. And this year, we don't have that. We have $799, right?
Or $750.
$749. So it's not even that big of a jump. It's like $750 instead of $650 as the low-end model, which is a good model. And, like, from that alone, I don't think that's a crazy difference. Everyone keeps saying $1,000 iPhones because that was an option last year and it's an option this year. But last year, we had $700 iPhones and it wasn't a problem, and this year we have $749 iPhones and it is a problem.
There is a slight difference in that, like, last year you'd have the iPhone 8 at $699 and then the iPhone 8 Plus at $799. Mm-hmm. Well, now that, like, they if you look at, like, the iPhone 8 going up $50 to get the equivalent of the 8 Plus, you're having to go $250 beyond the $750 mark.
Yeah, but it's arguably, like, a mix of both of those things. So it's, I feel like it kind of levels out in, like, what you get. It's so different in terms of, like, being, like, in, like, if you, the innovation, all of this really confuses me because, like, define innovation, but I feel like the Tenor is, like, more innovative than, like, the mix of 8 and 8 plus were, and it's for, like, a mix of the price, too. So I feel like that kind of levels out, but I don't get the impression from all of this that we're going to see cheaper products, like, get a better deal as consumers.
Yeah, I think if you come away with that, you're just kind of, like, overlaying your own bias on the thing. And I think the best answer for me is they increased prices on every single product, and it seems like they already say that outside of the iPhone, everything else was up 20% revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you look at the iPhone, they say they're going to set revenue records in key markets like the United States. So it doesn't seem like their strategy is flawed fundamentally, because then you'd think you'd see weaker demand in every country. Like, it seems like, at least at the moment, that it really is, you know, heavily focused on China. And that's a... they like calling it a non-Apple specific factor. I don't think they're gonna, the September will roll around and suddenly the new phones will be $100 cheaper worldwide.
Like, when I read this letter, what I think is that they see an issue in these emerging markets where they're not having as much success with items that do well in the US, and that maybe they need to make specific models that aren't just the old models and like certain configurations in those markets. Like, you know, maybe there needs to be – just how there's a version of the XS with a physical dual SIM for a specific reason in China. Like, maybe they should have different decisions like that. Like, you know how this year we get the iPhone XR with one camera and it costs $750. It's like, maybe, you know, the XR would have two cameras in the US, but like in the China, they look at like, what are the values here for what the phone has and what we can do in software and hardware. And let's make different trade-offs to get to a different price point, you know, like – and have that be a China-specific model or an India-specific model of the iPhone.
Yeah, that is kind of where I come down.
And they've not done that there before, really, right? Like,
no,
that would be new.
The dual SIM thing, where they're doing physical dual SIMs for XR and XS now, is like the first thing they've really done there, because their India strategy is, we sell the iPhone SE there and we make it locally.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a custom model. It's the same model, just built domestically. And then the China model is, we just sell the same phones we sell in the US. And even if you ignore, like, pricing is one thing, but even if you, like, look at feature set, right? Maybe there's a feature that the Chinese customers value that US customers don't. And if they want to, and I think it's pretty clear they're getting a lot more pummeled from competition in China than they are in the US, like Huawei and all these random, like, domestic Chinese brands
that are doing pretty well at the moment. And,
Oppo and all those, yeah, exactly. Maybe there's a feature in China that's really well valued, and if it's not on the iPhone, the worldwide iPhone, then it's not in China. So, and it's probably going to be like some pricing differential. Even if they just cut the... this is kind of what I was hinting at when I did the Tesla example earlier. Like, let's say they cut the XR price by $100 just in China for the time being, right? That is, I think, the most you're going to see. You're not going to see the price of the iPhone in America go down. Like,
right.
Everyone's going to complain, oh, in the China, it's $100 cheaper now. But but realistically, that's not going to stop people buying it in America.
Like, I've seen a lot of people pull up the letter from Steve Jobs when the iPhone, like, 1 was out, and they reduced the price, you know, like, halfway through the cycle. It's like, that's not what we're going to get here, because that's not...
it's completely different. Yeah. It's like everyone brings up that video as well, when it was, like, Steve Jobs in 1980 talking about why the company that kicked him out is doing badly. And it's like, it's not 19, it's like 1995 time frame. And he's like, they went for profits, not for market share. And if they had gone for market share, they would have, the Mac would have 30% market share by now. And at the moment, it's got single digit percentage. Like, look at the state of the iPhone. It is not single digit percentages. If you want to, like, don't bring out that video. Like, the iPhone already has more than 30% market share in basically everywhere, it's apart, like, from China.
Or is it magnitude of a different scale?
It's ridiculous. Like, so basically they were about 7% miss, right, on the revenue estimate on the lower bound, right? Which was equivalent to like $8 billion, $6-7 billion. The miss that we referenced from 2002 was a 10% miss, and it was $200 million. Like, it's just like, you can't use history like that. It's just ridiculous. And I think in general, the $1,000 iPhone strategy has worked for them. And like, I don't want the iPhone to be... I'd be perfectly happy if the iPhone was cheaper. I'm not like gun-ho for Apple making stuff more expensive, and I didn't even buy a XS this year. But this is like a very weird quarter at the moment, and it, one quarter of it going weird in one region is not going to make them make the iPhone cheaper globally. It's just not going to happen. And the, especially the thing where they talk about setting revenue records in all these markets and every other product, I think that's kind of them like hinting that our strategy is generally fine. Like, it's not dire enough that they need to start slashing prices left, right, and center. Like, it's just unrealistic. Like, people can complain that everything's more expensive, but in the aggregate, it's still working. Even if you ignore last year, like, if you ignore last year's numbers of 88 billion, and you look at 2016 results, so the year before, right?
Mm-hmm.
They had $78 billion in revenue in that holiday quarter.
Yeah.
So if you go 2 years out, if you don't do a year-over-year compare, you do a two-year compare, they're still up $5 billion almost, right? Like, it could be a blip. It's kind of like how the iPhone 6, you know, pushed forward loads of sales, and then iPhone units declined for a while because it was, like, pent-up demand for the bigger screens. And then, but if you look at the overall curve, it's still going upwards. Maybe that's kind of what's going to happen here. Although the macroeconomic stuff from China is, like, really wonky. And the problem with the macroeconomic stuff is that I don't know enough about China's GDP conditions. Like,
well, my sense of it is that it must have been it sounds like it was a sharp decline from, like, recent policy changes. You know, they say trade war, and, you know, just like reading the temperature, that isn't going away anytime soon. And so it seems my fear is, like, that could get much worse, like, way worse. You know, we already saw today Larry Kudlow, Trump's economic advisor, used to be CNBC commentator for years, and then now he tells Trump economic policy in person instead of through the TV. And you know, he like kind of just like made a comment off on the side of like, maybe China stole technology from Apple. You know, we think that's happening and that they're benefiting from that, and that Apple's taking a hit from it. And it was so general. And he said, and they might even be investigating it. We're not sure. But it's like, that's kind of rhetoric of like, you know, US versus China, and like China's, you know, bad there, and like the US is going to, you know, concerned about it. But it's just, and it's not saying anything super strong, but it's like just touching on it. And so it feels like, you know, for lots of reasons, this could get way worse. And, you know, it's almost like, you know, if you focus on China, like part of it is like Apple's dependency on iPhone for growth is like what makes them look, you know, look healthy and do well. Like, $84 billion is a lot of money, but no one cares if it isn't growth. And by missing, it's way worse. But it's like, if, you know, how dependent is Apple on China? Like, can Apple pull out of China and, you know, like shake up their business and people still be impressed? Probably not. And it feels like China could get way worse for Apple. Like, you know, people are saying,
yeah, or it's going to take a long time for like their growth in their other businesses, which also depend on China to a decent extent, to catch up, to make up the difference. Like, eventually you'd probably expect they probably could close that China gap, but it would be like, that would be like a half decade thing, which is a very, very long time. And they're, you know, the investment market would be shot until it happens. So, but it's like unrealistically far out.
Yeah, but it is pretty tense right now. I mean, like the for lots of reasons, but like it was a very serious question of people asking, like, Tim Cook, are you concerned about traveling to China on the fear of like being arrested as an American citizen because of like what's happening with Huawei and the trade war? And I think there was a CFO arrest of a Huawei executive in another country. And it's like, for lots of reasons, it's like, that was a serious question. And he had to say no, that he's going to visit China, you know, very soon, like at the end of the quarter. And in the letter to investors, they needed to say that they're very proud to do business in China. Like, they've got to be pro-China as a company, whereas the government, you know, President Trump and the administration can be, you know, America first and
aggressive,
aggressive. And they'll let us say, we are proud to participate in the Chinese marketplace. Like, you know, that's not saying nothing. That's there for a reason. Like, that's for China to read. And so they've got to play diplomat to China, like Tim Cook especially, in a big way, and it's at odds with what the administration is doing. And it's that's tough, but it feels like it could get way worse. If it does, then I think it's easier for people to like separate China versus iPhone, because like regardless of the China situation, iPhone growth has already been a concern, like anyway.
Yeah.
And so this is, you know, it's easy to look at this as like Apple using China as an excuse for what's already been going on with the iPhone. And you've got to kind of break out like what percentage is what. But if it got way worse in China, I think it'd be much clearer than this would be. And then you'd say, oh, that's, you know, because of China, like Apple's having issues. But then you can say, so is every other company that does business in China, you know, and they need to be less dependent on China, you know, for growth and for, you know, success.
But, which is partly why they've been talking up India, but yeah, they don't have anything special there yet apart from the iPhone SE, which is still more expensive than most of the phones sold in India. So it's...
Yeah, I mean, just as a casual observer of like the way that goes, is it seems like India was pushed as a big opportunity years ago, like, you know, 5 years ago or so, and that they haven't got out what they thought they could yet. Like,
they have like 1% market share in India at the moment.
Right. And
which is terrible.
Right, right. Like, whereas they had the big lofty goal of like doubling their services business from 2016 to 2020, like they're on track for that. It feels like India was a goal that they had, and you know, they didn't give like a hard number, but they've not cracked it yet. They've not figured it out.
Yeah, and they didn't even, and it felt like they kind of were a bit blasé about it, to be honest, because they didn't even start doing domestic manufacturing in the SE until like early last year. So it's before that they were having like 30% tariffs just on importing the phone.
And that's another example of like maybe there should be iPhones that you can't even buy in the US, but they're for emerging markets, like, you know, and that you want to sell it in mass numbers. But it's like it would affect the iPhone business in the US negatively if you sold an iPhone with that feature set, even at that price point. Like, you know, you wouldn't make it up in volume. But that in other emerging markets, like, you need to have that as an option. Yeah.
And yeah, like maybe in emerging markets, you need to focus on market share expansion for a while.
Right.
Whereas in US, you've already got, you know, you're already set up with like 50% iPhone overall. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to be as price sensitive there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one last thing I'd like to say on this overall thing is that now, every single product announcement now from Apple over this next 8 month period, everyone's going to be like, evaluate it against this letter as if it's going to make any difference. Like, Apple's product lineup for this year is set in stone. There is the only thing they can really change is how much they charge for stuff, right? Like, especially I think iOS 13 is gonna be a great example where if it doesn't have like this massive home screen revamp, everyone will be like, see, now Apple's on the rocks, they're finally innovating again. Like, they just throw out the innovation buzzword, and it'd be even worse if we hadn't already heard about the rumors from last year of like the home screen redesign was delayed and now it's been pushed forward to now. And it'll be the same with like whenever the next iPad comes out in the spring, it'll be like, oh, this is the same price as the one last year. It must be because they're having to be more conscious of keeping the prices down. Like, everything now is just going to be like memed back to the letter. It's going to be so annoying.
The only thing I can imagine, like, because I don't think we get any changes in terms of like what they release in 2019. Like, I could see, and like maybe like you said, play with the pricing on all of it. But like, if they feel like they're stuck with their current like hardware offerings, that maybe they could like boost up when they start selling something new. Like, in the last few cycles, we've seen, you know, some of the flagship lineup released later than September, not in September. So like, you get something in September and then something else in October or November. So like, we're not really on track for that. But like, maybe they could release new iPhones in like July or like June or August. Like, you know, and they used to do summer iPhone launches, and like for whatever reason, it went back and went to the fall in October and then September with the 4S and the 5. And like, maybe that just helps with, you know, you've got a new set of devices to work with, if they're ready. But, you know, we haven't seen
like write the 10R off as a flop, for instance, and bring in something new, a replacement for it, sooner than you would have normally.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, it's like this is the new version of the 10R, you know, like whatever you name it. It's like the 10R wasn't a flop, but like we've innovated faster than, you know, that we're not resting on our laurels. It's like,
yeah, we're excited to bring innovation to you now.
Yeah, it's like, and it wouldn't run iOS 13 yet, but like iOS 12 is well liked and everything. It's like, and then you can update to iOS 13 in the fall, you know, for free. It's like, you know, how I could kind of see that. I don't know how much it would help or not, but, you know,
yeah, or how much flexibility there is for Apple to do it, because obviously the iPhone's such a massive product, they have to do stuff so many months in advance. But
And then what could that do with, say, the 10s and 10r and other markets? Like, could you then, you know,
keep going with them, or we'll give up? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe I feel like, and this is more a gut reaction than anything, but say if Apple really wanted to release an iPhone in the summer, I feel like they could start ordering parts now and get stuff out the door.
And it wouldn't have to be like both iPhones. It could, I mean, it would be kind of annoying, but like, what if there was the XR equivalent in the summer and the XS equivalent in the fall? You know, like,
yeah,
you have different iPads throughout the year, different iPhones throughout the year. I don't know how much of a difference
we generally see them ramp supply, like ramp production in like the July period, right? For the September launch. So I feel like if you take that 2 month window and then add, say, another month on top, because it's like not the plan, it hasn't been like the long plan, but they're kind of rushing out the door.
Pressure,
so you've got to give a bit more leeway for people to get up and running. I feel like you could do a summer iPhone. You could push something forward and get it out in like the June, July timeframe if you really had to, right? Like, I'm sure it wouldn't be ideal and there'd be problems and their gross margins might be hit for a while because they have to pay more people to get stuff done faster. But it seems like something that is a not insurmountable problem if that's what they felt would actually help.
Yeah. On this topic of innovation, like, that's something that I just really had to like sit on and think about. Of like, when people say that, what do they mean? And I think it means like what excites people, like what they think is like whiz bang and like, you know, I want that. And if it's, even if it's like technology advancing, if it doesn't excite them, it's not innovation. And it needs to be like way different to be innovative. I mean, they changed the way the iPhone looks, and that's what we wanted. And we like the way it looks now, like, and it feels great because of it. And to me, that feels great. But like, people still want innovation. And I, you know, like so going forward, we see Apple making this move to invest in services and like grow that business so that it's not just like iPhone dependent to be Apple, that you can also look at revenue of like, you've got this massive install base. And now you extract more money from them without even buying, you know, them buying a new iPhone. Every customer is worth more money to you then, even if they don't buy a new iPhone every year or every 2 years. The innovation thing is like, you want to be excited. And I'm not sure that you get excited about like a video service that makes Apple a lot of money. and what you probably get excited about is like, you know, the electric car project or like, you know, maybe the Apple Glasses project. Like, that stuff excites you. And I don't know that those are like especially the AR thing, like massive businesses, even if you call it innovation. And so I tend to think that like the solution, you know, whatever innovation means is like more boring and like, you know, good on like a spreadsheet and like not exciting in like a keynote, you know, kind of solution here.
Yeah, innovation is such it's an easy word to hide behind because you can just throw it out there and people can just like nod along. But then you think about it, it's like, what do you actually mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because the you look at the, like we were complaining about this before the iPhone X came out, right? You had 6, 6S, 7, and even the 8 were, you know, I think a lot of people would say there was a little innovation that happened on there. And what
I
they
would
mean
call
is
that a tick-tock-tock-tock cycle if the 10
Yeah,
exist.
And what they mean there is it didn't look different, right?
Right.
And we've just had the massive change in iPhone X in 2017 that was really radically different, like iPhone 4 style different.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously we were expecting a tock, you know, a 10S, but people are obviously less excited about it this year than they were about the massive design change. But it's unreasonable to expect massive design change every year for the sake of it, because I don't think it was what they're going to do differently, really. Like, and I think if you want to throw around the words innovation, then you should point to like what other companies are doing that Apple isn't. And I think, for instance, the camera is an area where you can say Apple is, you know, not up to par necessarily, right? Because for a while the iPhone always had top tier camera, and more recently it's a lot more debatable now. Like, a lot of people would say even like the Pixel 2 can take better pictures than the XS can, and it's a lot of it's subjective, but I think a lot of people would kind of say Google is innovating more on the camera than the iPhone is. I think like the night mode night sight features that rolled out is a good example of that, right? Mm-hmm. Is it because you have to wait and it takes like 5 seconds for the picture to take? Clearly, it's not the main way everyone's to take pictures now, but it's a good feature that would come in useful in certain situations. And Apple hasn't shown any interest in adopting it across two versions, right? So, and I think those kind of the people that would argue about like Apple isn't innovating anymore would say, well, we would expect the iPhone to do that first, not maybe next year. Like, so there are definitely areas where but there's also areas where Apple's leading the market. We already talked about AirPods still being unrivaled. And I think the iPhone X gestures are way better than what Android have tried to do on any platform. Like, the iPhone 10 gestures are so much smoother, fluid, and make much more sense.
Yeah, Face ID even. Like, it's not perfect, and it's better now than it was a year ago. I know people still would like Touch ID as an option, and people now are calling for, like, do Touch ID under the screen, even with Face ID. But if you look at Face ID on its own, like, you don't see something as good as that with the same biometric security on Android yet. And Touch ID was, like, first and better for a couple years ahead of time, and, like, then it caught up. And I don't think that we've seen Face ID catch up in the same way yet, like in the way that Touch ID caught up eventually.
Yeah, basically no Android phones do the depth cameras at all.
Yeah, you can unlock with your face, but they, you know, you get the admission from, like, Samsung that, you know, your twin
is less secure.
Do it. Right.
Yeah. And there's a decent argument that's good enough for a lot of people, because even on the Face ID system, if you're identical twins, then you have the same problem. So, there are definitely, like, counterbalance and stuff, but you can say Apple's innovating in the secure biometric arena, right? Mm-hmm. And you have to pick more niches. But I think it's... I don't like the, oh, Apple's not innovating, full stop, because it's just not true. But I would say you could say that Apple's innovated less this year than they did last year on the iPhone, just because they kind of grouped so many changes together. And they're still charging the same $1,000 price point. Because it seems like a lot of people had this idea that the $1,000 iPhone was like a one-time thing. And it was like the special anniversary. Oh, it's $1,000 because it's special edition, iPhone X. And then people had this idea in their head that next year it was going to go back down to like $650.
I mean, before the XS came out, there was space in the rumors for the XS to be $899 instead of $999,
yeah.
And that didn't happen. You know, and
I kind of still think that'd be a fairer price point as well, but that wasn't what I expected to happen. That's just kind of what I wanted.
But. Yeah, with the bigger screen in mind, we thought maybe we'd see XS for, and like not just like thinking, but like there were analyst predictions of like XS for $900 and XS Max for $1,000, and that didn't happen. No.
Yeah. So, it definitely wasn't going back to 650 levels. And
right.
It's definitely interesting that if you keep charging $1,000, do you need more flashy features every single year versus... But I don't think Apple would want to go to this thing where, oh, it's $1,000 this year and then next year it's $800 because we haven't changed anything this year. Like, they're going to want to keep it uniform as much as possible. So, and what will happen... And what's kind of interesting at the moment, we don't have clear visibility into the 2019 iPhones yet. Like, Minchi Kuo said that he won't be able to give us his report on the iPhones until the first quarter, whereas before he's always done it in like November. So that is now like January, February, March timeframe. We're still waiting for that. And if they follow the iPhone 6 series tradition, again this year it's going to look the same as the iPhone 10, right?
Yeah.
It's not going to be a design change after 2 years. It's fascinating.
One more on this topic, and then we'll jump off. But do you think that a couple of things. So a lot of people, you know, we see on Twitter, like if only the iPhone still had a home button, which kind of like confuses me. But okay, I'll take it. Or if it had a headphone jack, which was, you know, the old complaint, but like now we're going to bring that back. A lot of people have their pet complaints that they're now applying to the situation. They're saying, "See, told you. If iPhones had this one thing I wanted, then this wouldn't have happened." That's just going to happen. It's going to be out there on the side. But do you think that this, you know, that like the board or, you know, should look at Tim Cook's performance and say like question it in this quarter? My guess is that it's look at the quarter as a single thing. And like, you know, you have raised your eyebrows, but you don't make a judgment yet. And then you look at the pattern over the next, you know, few quarters and you say, okay, now, you know, we're better or stable or we're in trouble. But what do you think about like Tim Cook's performance that led to this quarter?
Yeah. If you just pretend we don't know the financial results for a second, I think the product line is in a pretty good shape, even accounting for the price increases. I think it's a way better lineup that they have in 2018 than they did in 2017. Personally, and that's partly tempered by the idea of like the XS revisions. But again, you can look at like the Samsung phones, and they have plenty of years where the external design doesn't change. And so I don't think it's unreasonable to expect Apple to have constantly new hardware designs every single year. It's just not going to happen. I think this quarter is I think they're going to be all right, right? Like at the end of the day, it's 88 billion versus 84 billion, right? They're not going out of business, full stop. It's not going to happen. clearly the guidance, missing the guidance was problematic. If they miss guidance on the next quarter, it is going to be like five times worse. So I wonder if like on then the next at the next investing call when they do guidance the quarter after, if they go really conservative just because they don't want to screw up again.
Yeah, right? Yeah, overreact. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where you have to temper it. I think this letter is pretty good. And I think we'll have to wait and see if other smartphone manufacturers report similar declines in China or if it's more of an Apple-specific problem, right? Mm-hmm. Because if the Chinese market really has slowed so much, then you should see other phone manufacturers have similar weaknesses, and like Apple's percentage share of the market shouldn't really go down. It just means the overall number of phones sold went down.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the picture that Apple's trying to paint in this letter. And if that turns out to be true, then I think people will just get on with it.
Mm-hmm.
If that's not true, then it's more problematic.
Right, right.
But it will be like... we had similar parallels in like 2015 when it was like iPhone units declining for a while and revenue and total quarterly revenue went down year over year as well. And people said the same things about Apple wasn't innovating and blah, 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 blah. And you get over it, and then you have two more years of ridiculous growth for a big company.
Yeah.
This is definitely, I think, the worst it has been. Like, missing the guidance, for me, is almost worse than the decline. If they'd have accurately predicted the decline, it would have been fine, realistically. Mm. Like, the stock would have still gone down, but there's much bigger warning signs to me that they couldn't know where the business was going. And so that is the biggest warning flag that we have to like look out for. But I think Apple's going to be fine. Like, they might have another year of it being like rubbish, and then the Chinese economy will come back a little bit, and they'll have the new iPhone lineup for the 2020 lineup, for instance. And probably by 2020, they will have announced plans for major changes to other products, even if not the iPhone, whether that's like the ARM Mac stuff, whether it's the reveal of the glasses, that kind of thing. And people will forget, and like the outrage of what we've seen like the past week will probably be forgotten. Like, there was definitely a reaction. I actually think the stock market reaction was like the most tame, because they missed guidance by like 8%, and the stock market's gone, and the Apple stock price has gone down by like 8%. So it seems kind of like reasonable. Yeah. The Twitter reaction of the whole iPhone pricing, I think the pricing coming away from this thing thinking everything's too expensive is completely wrong.
Mm.
If you can come away and say Apple's products were not appealing enough and maybe they should have had more features ready for the XS launch, I think that's a reasonable thing to come away from. But the pricing, I think the current strategy with the pricing going up as to the levels we've seen it is annoying and upsetting for, you know, us people buying it. But in general, their business seems to be going perfectly fine. So it's going well. Like, again, if you do a 2-year compare, they're up $5 billion in revenue in this quarter. So I think they'd be all right. Like,
yeah, it definitely, I think it's hard to argue that this 10S cycle is like, if you have an iPhone 10, it's the least reason to upgrade ever. And that it's like last year you got the 8 and the 10, and like one of those phones is way more advanced than the other one. And like this year, one of those phones is very similar to the one from last year. And you know, you pay the same price all over again, or you pay more for the bigger one. It's like, that's tough. But like, you know, part of the hit is like that people with 8s and 7s and older didn't buy new phones, and that's a problem. But those are also people that didn't pay $1,000 for a phone, you know, and the 10R, maybe, you know, they overshot it there with what they priced it at. And there were, you know, investors saw that too. Like, there were some early reports about the, you know, Apple might have made a wrong gamble there on the price of the 10R, and like they didn't go. He didn't hit it with that, and but to me, it's like I feel like it could get way worse. But if it gets way worse, like I said earlier, it would be obvious that it's because of, you know, China and policy, and not like Tim Cook's performance. And for that reason, it's like this quarter is tricky. But like it's got to be like a U.S. problem or like global problem for it to be Tim Cook specific in the future. But like Apple's business could get hit way harder, but that if it does and it's because of China, like, then we're going to see that, you know, more than in just the letter, but like, you know, other companies having issues too. So it's a little bit scary, but it also like raises stakes and makes everything a little bit more interesting to watch too. So
though.
Yeah, and they say Apple's, you know, managed for the long term. Like, we love to, like, freak out about these, like, quarterly changes, but people forget it in years to come, right?
If it resolves. If it doesn't resolve, yeah, no one's going to forget it.
Exactly. Yeah. But you know, like, the one-quarter blips are easily passed over in the long run. Like, it's a very clearly tough economic market between the trade war stuff. Like, just look at the stock market overall. Like, Amazon was a $1 trillion company as well at the end of last year, and now it's $700 billion too. Like, they're big worldwide problems, and it's not just Apple specific. But if they start significantly losing market share in China at a clip, and then they don't recover it, then obviously that's bad.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a macroeconomic problem, then they should kind of just bobble along a bit, and then when it recovers, they recover too. So
yeah.
And one last thing I want to mention on the battery program is, if they ever say that they shouldn't have done it, then that is really bad.
Yeah.
It's a play for long-term loyalty, right? Like, mm-hmm. And between iOS 12 making older phones more performant and the battery program, they must have known that people are going to hold on. Like, they're not stupid, right? But the point is, those customers are going to be more loyal to the iPhone than ever. And before they upgrade their device, they're more likely to invest in Apple services. They're more likely to buy Apple Watches or AirPods or iPads or complementary services and products. And then down the road, when it comes to an upgrade again, they will buy a new iPhone because they've loved having their phone for a long time. Whereas if you went the other way and you upset people and you screw people over, they're going to jump ship. Like, it's a long-term play, and nowhere in this letter does it say that they made the wrong move there. They're just admitting it, that it's an impact on the current quarter. So if they ever go on this earnings call and say, oh, the battery program was a problem, and they use that kind of language, I'd be very upset. And that is something where it's like they're going to be mismanaged, because you have to play for long-term loyalty here. Like, you can't say that Apple manages for the future and not, and Tim Cook's always saying that the 90-day clips are never accurate representations, and then go and say things like the battery program is a problem. So it seems, in general, like, for me, the iOS 12 and the battery is, like, fantastic. Like, people say that, oh, Tim Cook's mismanaging Apple. Like, go to iOS 10 era, and you'd say, and you had plenty of other problems to complain about. Like, you'd be complaining about that everything's buggy and everything's, and all older devices are slow. So everyone just moves to different things to complain about as the time goes. And we do it too, right? But it's like, I don't think there's anything fundamentally wrong with the current management team as it stands. And adding on John Giandri is actually one of the biggest improvements they've made to the executive team as well recently. So
hopefully, like,
it's going to be rough, I'm sure. And I don't think the China economy is not going to be better in 2 months' time. So we could go a whole year of, like, iPhone decline. But as long as those problems are limited to the macroeconomic conditions and not anything else, Apple will recover eventually.
Yeah, and makes me think too that Apple does have people in charge of China. Like, I'm not sure how to pronounce her name, but Isabel Guillemet,
yeah,
is the vice president and managing director of Greater China. Like, they have one whole person in charge of China. Like, you know, that's only true for China. You know, so there's a team to work on that, and hopefully, you know, that even if they, like, boost that team, then that speaks to me, and I imagine it would speak to investors too. By the way, they mentioned the iOS 12 battery thing. The person that shared the AirPower, you know, like, talk, you know, from an engineer to another person, said that they had heard that iOS 12, that users saw a 2% increase, or Apple saw a 2% increase in customers who can make it through the day without needing to recharge through iOS 12. So
2%?
2% more people made it through the day without having to recharge compared to iOS 11 and before. So it's not something I would put in a story, just, like, because of how the information was obtained, but just, like, as an interesting, you know, discuss on a podcast piece of information.
That's interesting, because obviously they never really marketed iOS 12 as being a battery improvement, but if you do efficiency changes over the course of the system, you are going to add up to minor, like, power improvements too. So
right. So that's interesting. So and people seem to see that too, you know, and their, like, use, it seems, especially, like, people love the 10R for the battery life too. So it's interesting.
Yeah, everyone that buys a 10R seems to be really happy with it. It's just they're not selling a lot of them.
You get the time to buy them. Yeah. Well, Mayo, that is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. And with that being said, we'll be back next week. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Apollo Zach, and Benjamin, you are?
BZA Mayo.
And you can also follow 9to5Mac. You can email us feedback at happyhour@9to5Mac.com. And we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.